Hello, and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. It's episode 160, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars. And joining me are the creator of the brilliant webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
The man who only wears Chuck Norris action jeans, Mr. Tony Esmond.
I have in front of me a copy of issue one, Chuck Norris Karate Commandos. Right, little pop quiz. Who drew it?
I'm just going to take a punt. Sal Buscema.
Steve Ditko.
Really?
Yep.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Bloody hell.
Have they spelled Commandos with a K?
Yes, they have.
Ah, there you go.
Thank God.
Communists. Yeah.
Written by Joe Duffy. There you go.
Oh, dear. Before we go completely off track, we've also got another guest this week. Yes, this week we're joined by the brainiac behind the True Believers Comic Festival, and he's one of the nerds who haunted themselves. We're going to ask what that means very soon. Yes, it's once again, it's Stuart Mulrain. Hello, Stuart.
Hello, Vince. How are you?
Hello, Stuart.
Hello, Tony. How are you? Hello, Daniel.
Hello.
This is the most genteel introduction we've ever done.
Yeah. You said do radio voice.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, do your phone voice. Go on, do your posh phone voice. Yes, it's true.
I like listening to your show because it's just you two sort of bickering for a couple of hours.
Well, that's because Andy doesn't know what he's talking about. I think we mention your show more than our own on it.
Is that desperate?
Yeah.
Oh, so determined we are to bring you down.
So, yeah. We're the only ones who bring people down. You know that. Yeah. You know that. But yes, thank you for joining us this week, Stuart. Are you gonna...
That's right. Thrilled to be on to talk Murder, She Wrote.
What, on the crossover
porn
with Magnum?
Porn parody. Brackets, porn parody.
Oh, yeah.
Lord.
Oh, you got my slash fiction then.
I would definitely do it back in the day. I tell you now.
What?
Jessica Fletcher. Or...
Are you talking?
Yeah, that's... definitely. Are you remember talking... the one where she sort of plays, she does sort of sexy and sort of dances a bit?
No.
To sort of seduce some bloke.
Oh,
into
where she pretends to be drunk, yeah.
That's the one, that's the one. Christ almighty.
Are you all right, Tony? Do you want a moment?
No, I don't think I'll have a moment after seeing that. I've got to tell you.
She sort of breaks him psychologically. She's like, yes, just fucking stop. I'll tell you. I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's like when you're really up close to it, you must look like that, mustn't it? And when you're right up close to it, I like to look at it a bit more, you know.
Jesus.
Staring into the abyss.
Well, yeah. Well,
stares back
must,
into you.
I must say, we've had a slight uptake in listeners recently, and it was nice to have you while you were here, and we're sorry to see you.
Yeah. I told you your listener figures would go down.
Yeah.
I've got to be honest, this chat roulette session's gone really weird.
Yeah.
Dan's topless.
That's
fat.
But before we get into the... just the nooks and crannies of what we're going to talk about this week. Yes, you love a nook and a cranny. How are we, gents? How's everyone's week been?
Good.
Yeah. I had a nice meal out with Jason Gunn and Mr. Prolix last night, and Nick didn't even wear his beret, which I was quite disappointed at.
That's a shame.
Yeah.
Shame on you.
Yeah. We went to a weird graveyard at one point, which was quite amusing.
Why? Yeah. Why?
What happened there? Why'd you do that then?
Yeah, why?
I don't know. We just fancied going there. So we had to wander through a graveyard.
Yeah. Why? You're 12?
Build up an appetite.
Yeah. We had a ruby and then we went for a walk through a graveyard.
What are they building up an appetite for?
Oh, no. After that, you're walking the walking the curry off afterwards.
Oh, well,
yeah. Yeah. I went for I did a number two behind a gravestone. So he catches you sometimes, doesn't it? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's disrespectful if you do it on the other side.
Well, yeah.
But, yeah.
Did you make note of the name on the tombstone?
You must have done things in graveyards before. Come on, it's the place you go to do things, isn't it? When you're a kid and you're a teenager and you can't go home, you just go to a graveyard, don't you? You just go crazy.
I think the only thing I've done is lay flowers, and imagine you're talking about laying something else.
yeah, Tony.
I went and did some rubbins, but I got that completely wrong.
Hey, this steady on, son.
Yeah.
Who hasn't done a rubbing in a graveyard?
I've told you my story about the graveyard, haven't I? I'll tell you. I can't tell it on air. I cannot possibly tell that one on air. We might as well just go off the air if I tell that one.
Yeah. Oh dear, unbelievable!
You see me at True Believers, and I'm on the panel. Put your hand up and
ask that question.
Oh God, yeah.
kid-friendly, Tony.
Yeah, PG-13, Tony. You've told me. You've dictated to me. This is PG-13, Tony. You've looked me in the eye, held me by the collar, and said, PG-13. Don't forget.
Are you capable of doing that, Tony?
Sorry?
Are you capable of doing that, sort of pre-Watershed Esmond?
Wait, I've written two children's books this year, thank you. Yeah, I'm very good at the kids. Kids like me. I'm kid-friendly.
All right.
Yeah.
I will say that I've actually witnessed this man sign a lot of books for kids at shows.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. I wrote things like Let's Fight Monsters, and kids like it, that sort of thing. I'm quite good. My son's grown up now, but yeah, I know about kids. I'm a cool
dad. Kids come over with issue one of Little Heroes.
Yeah, yeah, when we were at Swindon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, you're a man of the people, Tony.
And speaking of people to give say hello to, is I'm the comic I'm doing with Andy. I am Zooked. Andy Hanks has been announced, so quite pleased about that.
Oh, nice.
Doing
one.
A sort of kids comic for Aaron Rackley's kids company, so we're excited.
Do you want to tell us a little bit more about it, Tony?
It's kind of a sort of sci-fi superhero story, but it also includes elements of how to draw things. And I've written a sort of structure to it and some dialogue, and it fits around how you draw stuff. And Andy's great. I mean, he is amazing. He's doing a couple of pages a week and they're fucking amazing. So it's slowly, but it's getting there slowly. And we're really into it. We've got a little WhatsApp group and we talk about it every day. It's really, really good. I'm really, really digging it. I've got to tell you. Yeah.
It's always good when a comic project is inspiring, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, we've got
not
some
when they're nicking my graphic designer, it's not.
I know, yeah, I've heard you say that, yeah. Look me in the eye again, grab me by the scruff of the neck. Look me.
Is that what you call it?
Ooh. Yes.
I tell you what, though, Stuart, you're coming across quite grumpy, complaining about Tony stealing your graphic designer.
Yeah, he's such a diva.
Yeah. And I bet you take our name in vain whenever you mention it on your show.
No, he's very nice about us.
I am very nice.
Yeah.
Never said anything bad about Vince.
Oh. I did get a message from him in the week saying, has Vince listened to it yet?
I'm going to say yes, but I'll listen. By the time this show airs, I will have.
Sweet, just tell me you forgive me then and it's fine.
Yeah. Oh my God, right, I need to listen to this now. Yeah. Do you know what I also need to do?
Oh, no. Download comics from Comic House.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Does anybody know if there's anything that's like a Netflix for comics out there?
Well, you've been saving it up.
It's been troubling me for a while.
Well, yeah. It's funny you should mention that, Stuart, because there certainly is a Netflix for comics out there, and it is Comic House. For those who don't know, or new listeners, welcome to the fold. I would suggest listening to another episode as well as this one, because this one isn't a sign of quality.
They're all shit.
But some are a little lesser shit than others. But no, Comic House is the indie comic marketplace with a difference. There's a massive selection of titles on their database. Lots of people sell their books through there. And if you want to self-publish your comic and sell it online, then you can list your book on their website, comichouse.com, for free. And when you sell a copy, they only take 1p commission, which is brilliant if you're a self-publisher. And you're just trying to get your comic out to all avenues. That's just the hard copies, though. If you have digital comics that you want people just to get hold of and read, we've talked a lot about digital recently. It's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Hard copies will never, they'll never go away. But no. Digital's bloody handy. And like Comic House, the app, yes, I said the app, is amazing. They've got a massive selection on there. Tony's absolutely marvelling at how I'm doing this ad this week, aren't you?
I just know that you've written these little asides in. I know. You're doing really well. I'm very proud of you again today. But
Well, it only took about, I think, 3.5 minutes before you fucked it up.
Got to throw a spider graph out now.
Yeah. I've got a Venn diagram of... but anyway, yeah, the app is brilliant because like, loads of people like host their comics through Comic House, and you can read them on the app essentially for free. I mean, it's £3 a month, but that's cheaper than your hard copy. Yeah. Comic book on a weekly basis. What have we got on there at the moment, Dan?
Sadly, there's no update this week because they're at a con. But there's a whole host of you remember the email from Pete saying something to that effect. But
SuperCon or whatever.
Yeah. They're actually at MCM Manchester.
Oh, of course, nice. Yeah.
So, but you can check out Lizardmen. That's a new miniseries that they're pushing, and the new edition of the app where you can turn it onto a landscape and read the comic that way, which is really handy.
Lizardmen's a great book, actually.
I've not read that one.
Yeah, it's really good.
Yeah, it's good. Well, I read the first issue. I need to catch up on it, actually.
And if you want to read it, Dan, you can read it on Comic House.
Oh, I will.
Yeah, there you go.
It's the Netflix for comics.
It's the Netflix for comics. And if you want to check it out, there's a 14-day free trial, which should be enough to sell you, because the database is only growing and growing and growing.
Yeah.
And also, it's good to host your comic on there as well. So, yeah, because advertising revenue comes in and you get a little bit of it. I've seen more from Comic House than I have from Comixology, shall we say.
Yeah.
And, so there you go.
And if you've already formatted your comic for Comixology, it's literally you can copy and paste the info over and upload the PDF and you're done.
Ooh.
So you might as well do it.
Yeah. It's very easy to upload your comics, isn't it, and sort out. So
yeah.
Very good. So if you want to find out more, go to comichouse.com. I think that was, that wasn't too bad, was it?
That went all right, I think that
one. Yeah. Do you know what, Tony? I don't write out all those asides, you know.
Whatever.
Sometimes I'm just doing improv, man. I'm just scatting. Do you know what I mean?
Nobody believes you.
Scabbity-bop.
Vince must have been a hell of a lot of work for every single interaction and possibilities got scripted.
Yeah. And, it was just that page where he was denying that it was scripted.
Yeah. I look up at the wall in front of me and it's like one of those massive sort of serial killer like charts, like there's string going everywhere with every possible thing I could say. And it still comes out terrible. But thank you, Comic House, for sponsoring the show. As always, we love you. And we hope they did well at MCM Manchester. From the sounds of it, that sounded like it was a good show for a lot of the people that went.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. I know the Reckless Heroes boys did very well. Mike Garland still there was.
Yeah. There was somebody there from Star Trek. Wasn't there somebody there from Star Trek or something?
Well, that narrows it down.
Yeah. Jesus. Did you send me a picture of someone, Dan, from someone from Star Trek earlier? Someone from the Mirror Universe.
Oh, I know what he's talking about. Right,
I send a lot of pictures to you guys on that MC, that WhatsApp group.
Yeah,
that is true. That is true.
All of them would get all of us in trouble.
Yeah, yeah. they would. They would. Yeah. But like, as like WhatsApp, do you use that for quite a lot of sort of like creator type stuff? Like, if you're collaborating with someone, do you go backwards and forth? I know you use it quite a lot, Tony, don't you?
Yeah, I've got a group for each of my things. I mean, I use it an awful lot for work as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, we use it for work and stuff. So there's little groups depending on what area of work I'm working in.
Yeah.
But yeah, I use it for creative stuff, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I would think, I mean, for me personally, because I use it more than like texting and like stuff like that now, it's just easier to send images through WhatsApp and stuff. That's probably what would be better for me.
It's cheaper for you guys, because you guys, I'm presuming you guys are mostly on Wi-Fi, when you're at work. See, I'm not, you see. So although I'm at the weekends and at home and stuff, I'm on Wi-Fi, or if I'm in Starbucks or something, but I'm not on Wi-Fi at work. But I don't mind. I've got sort of quite a big data package, so it's easy, you know.
But doesn't it cost to send? I guess it depends what your contract is, but sending images via text message,
it's more expensive,
that costs. Where the photos literally just the data.
Yeah.
And if you're on Wi-Fi, it's just going over that, isn't it?
I mean, for me personally, that sort of messenger like, sort of system. Which is, I mean, WhatsApp is essentially a step up from text messaging, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
But that sort of messaging system is better for me to go backwards and forwards with a creator. Well, I know people would probably say they use Google Documents or they use Facebook Messenger and all. There's all kinds of messengers.
You know, I combine it with a couple of things, really, mate, to be fair. Yeah. I mean, John Freeman's is Facebook Messenger because he's kind of at his desktop and stuff and doesn't really have his phone in his hand because he's not the sort of generation that does, you know?
Yeah.
So, but,
I mean, it's interesting what people use these days. For instance, Twitter direct message isn't a reliable form of communication now. Purely
because, on Twitter.
Yeah. People don't check them, do they? People don't check the DMs. Yeah. I know.
Because not saying that we're super popular, but we get quite a lot of notifications during the day. And I used to have it where my phone would notify me on the front of the screen if I got a Twitter notification or a message, but because you get quite a few, your phone would be going off all the time, wouldn't it, now, because people use Twitter more. Yeah. So it just comes up when I look at it. But then again, it's easier. For example, when we do the links for the show notes that we send you, we always do it on Twitter, don't we? Because it's easier for you to cut and paste, because it's more difficult to cut and paste. I know you can replicate your phone with BlueStacks or something on your computer screen, but it sounds a bit fucking wank.
But also, when I'm publishing like the episode, I'm doing it from a sort of desktop sort of computer. I'm not doing it through my phone.
So see, I use that WhatsApp desktop thing from Google Chrome, and that's great.
What was it? Okay.
Yeah, it's just like WhatsApp on the computer. So sometimes I see, if I'm working, I see a message come in on my phone and then check on the computer, type it on the reply, and it's a piece of piss.
Okay. Yeah, there's BlueStacks is the other one, I think, that you can basically replicate what's on your phone on the computer screen.
Okay. Well, if you use Chrome, just go to the apps and type in WhatsApp and you can get it going.
Well, weirdly, I got a new car yesterday, larging it up, and I've got one of those. You sync your iPhone with the little screen in the middle of the console.
Yeah.
And in that, I use Siri. I was using Siri as I was driving home yesterday to WhatsApp message people.
Oh, nice.
So you just, it says, you just say, Siri, send a message, and it sends a message that you read out.
Jesus.
That's fucking brilliant. The world's changed, isn't it? I had a pager in 1989. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Jesus.
I had that fucking pager I used to have, like, you kept it like near your kidney, and when it went off, it felt like I'd been shot or stabbed. It was like, fucking hell.
Why did you put it near your kidney?
It was like around the back, on the belt, sitting there.
Oh, right.
That's a cool place to have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can pretend you're like special forces or whatever. So
I had two because I'd have one from work as well. So I had one on either side. Fucking cool as fuck.
Yeah.
I used to have the one where it came up like a text message.
Yeah, that's what I had. Yeah. Well, you could have the one that just
Had a really feeble clip that whenever you went upstairs, it'd just send the thing pinging off your belt.
Yeah.
This might I say some really, to ring up the operator.
Say, what's the message? Because I used to work with wankers. I'd ring the message up. It'd say, have you got a boner from John at work? Or something, you know, something ridiculous like that. You love anal.
You'd have to ring up some poor fucking person and say, look, the message is, do you like a big cock up your ass? And they'd have to fucking type that out and send it to you.
Oh, God. Oh, no.
And like the other person you got to talk to is, the message is, were you like a big cock up? And they're like, okay, I'll send that. Jesus.
Have you told Siri to type that, Tony?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you know, I've trained my phone to call me something, haven't I?
Yeah. Is it Batman?
So I do it live on the air.
Yeah.
Oh, not
hey,
again.
Hey, Siri. What is my name?
Go ahead.
What is my name?
You're home, but you asked me to call you Batman.
How cool is that, eh?
Nice.
Yeah.
You're in love with that, aren't you?
I am, yeah. People love Batman.
It's like that film Her, isn't it? You form a relationship with it, don't you?
I had mine calling me King Dan, Lord of Awesome.
And what I do is I live my life, you sad...
Fuck off. You.
You're on a comics podcast.
Yeah. Pot kettle, meat black.
Anyway, talking of comics.
Yeah. Oh, dear. Stuart, you were here for the one where the band broke up.
Basically, my podcast has infected your podcast and it's all gone to shit.
Oh, dear. You Yoko.
People who listen to mine are used to this.
Anyway, the reason that Stuart's here, the next few weeks are going to be quite busy in the world of the Awesome Pod. Or ACP Towers. Do you think we've got a tower?
Yeah.
Or the basement. I mean, let's face it.
The dungeon.
Or an alleyway. back of the pub.
Basically something that's really dodgy.
Yeah.
The Awesome Pod van. There's the True Believers Summer Variant, which is coming up this very weekend as we speak. And there's Froome Comic Day coming up very soon in August. So they're two brilliant examples of indie comics events that we're seeing more and more of. I reckon over the past couple of years, I'm seeing even more like small press stuff. For instance, there's Small Press Day as well. That's become a big thing over the past.
Yeah, that's an oxymoron now, isn't it?
What'd you call me?
Hey.
But how many years has that been going? Is that two, three?
Three
years, isn't it? Bloody hell. So indie comics and small press events are just becoming, like, I'd say bigger and better. But when I say bigger, I don't mean, like, you know, we're not filling, like, huge stadiums. But the small press events, like, they're in stores and stuff like that, they're just better, getting better all the time. You're seeing a wider range of creators going to be at these events and do signings and stuff, and it's just getting the word out. It's just, I'm seeing more and more of them, and it warms my heart to see stuff like this. I know, for instance, we've done a couple of events at Swindon, the Incredible Comic Shop.
We're very popular there.
We are. We were very popular the last time because we went there.
And because we were popular the year we were there, but the one we were there because we stayed awake.
Yeah, we did. It's always good.
What kind of person would fall asleep at a small press event?
I know. That's for another show.
Show come timing, mate.
So big shout out to Sarah Harris, because if you don't mention her at least once a week,
she'll beat you.
She'll beat you to death.
I've just seen her art, because she's at that. What's that graffiti?
Upfest. The Upfest, which I unfortunately couldn't make it to this weekend. I so wanted to make it to, but I was going to a family wedding, so.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah,
we saw you all dressed up like a cockney gangster.
Is there some kind of pressure on you at these weddings to catch the bouquet or anything like that? Is it?
No.
Right. Staccato no from you. We'll leave that alone. That's logic.
Somebody didn't catch it.
Yeah.
I just go for the free buffet. No, don't do that. Yeah. But I was suited and booted, so I couldn't make it to Upfest because I know it's a brilliant graffiti sort of festival. And I know Sarah was actually doing artwork this year, so I hope it went well.
Or something this year,
She sent me a picture of one of her practice things because we do draw something Sunday, and I tag her in posts. And because she couldn't take part, but she wanted to prove she was actually doing something arty, she sent me over a picture of her practice one. Stunning work.
Is it like a Godzilla thing or something?
Yes. Is it Lost Dogs? She paints ours for.
Is it? Is that like a street name?
Yeah.
In a not sort of prostitute way.
Why do you have to clarify it like that, Tony?
Well, I don't want anyone to make any mistakes.
Yeah. There's a first.
It's Tony's frame of reference. Have you guys ever tried painting with spray cans? I've never done it.
No, God, no.
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 I tried spray painting my skateboard when I was a kid, and that was a nightmare.
So for me, like, the pens work best inside buses, but I didn't want to break out the old doing the old keys in the window, that's a bit shit. So
Bloody hell, Dan, I learn more about you every week. But anyway, we hope, Sarah, it went well at Fest.
Yeah, nice one.
We're looking forward to seeing more of that. She helps put on the small press sort of events in the Incredible Comic Shop in Swindon, which are always good. But there's more events like this happening everywhere, aren't there? And they are sort of getting better. We want, by the way, we always want to hear about these sort of things. So I know we give a shout out every week.
Tell us.
If any of these events are happening, no matter how big, small, or whatever, let us know and we will talk about it in the shout outs.
On a point in this, don't presume that we know, because
we know nothing.
Even though we've done this for like 3 years, and every week there's stuff comes across, and we're like, fuck me, why have we not heard of this?
Like, I hope people don't think we're ignoring their comic that's just coming out. It's just probably because we haven't seen it or we haven't heard about it. So if you've got something you've got coming out, then let us know. Do you know what I mean? I know the Facebook group isn't for advertising for sale, stuff like that, but we'd love to see preview copies and, you know, all that sort of thing as well. We're always looking for that.
We've mentioned events, for instance, like Orbital or Gosh or something. They'll have events, and we're like, whether it be like exhibitions or talks or anything, they get mentioned a lot. But that's, you know, that's Tony and
Dan.
Because
I'm going in those shops.
But
if we see an event, like we're mentioning it, but if it doesn't come across our sort of path, we can't. How can we know?
We'll do if you let us know. Like the other day when Gareth Brooks contacted me about South London Comic and Zine Fair, you know, that sort of thing. That's the sort of thing we want to hear about. You know.
Because there's more of these events happening all over the shop.
I think there's a small press event happening at Edinburgh Comic Festival, I think, in a couple of weeks, isn't it?
Oh, really?
I've got a feeling it's like, I will clarify this next week, but I think it's like the 12th of August, because I'm in Edinburgh till the 11th, sadly, and I'm missing it. So I was chatting to Alan Henderson about meeting up for a beer, and he said, oh, you're not about on the Sunday, and I can't, I'm driving back the Sunday. But I'll find out more about that next week.
And there's a lot of events, comic events happening on Sundays now. For instance, this True Believers Summer Variant, Frame Comic Day, this Edinburgh event. But that's interesting to me. These events are happening on those days. Now, Stuart, obviously you were setting up the True Believer. You do True Believers every year. God bless you. Thank you for doing that. What inspired you to do a smaller event? Because this is, you've got quite a few exhibitors there, but it is a smaller event, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we've done smaller events pretty much since after the first convention. We did a couple of Christmas fairs in a small cafe in Cheltenham, and we did a couple of free conventions in the shopping mall in Gloucester. And it was just sort of a building on that, really. And a lot of people have asked us to make True Believers a two-day event, so we thought we'll make it a second day, but 6 months later.
That's a good idea. Yeah, no, I like that. And,
And it was in the place where we were originally going to do True Believers, so we thought as an interesting experiment. Melksham was taking a year off initially when we first set it up.
Yeah.
So we thought it was a shame that there was nothing in the summer that had that small town, local community kind of feel event.
Yeah.
So we sort of put that in place to sort of fill the gap for that. Because the other thing with the convention calendar is if you leave a gap, somebody will dive right in it.
Yeah.
So we sort of did it as a placeholder for Melksham. Then Melksham said they weren't coming back, and like three or four people asked us to do it again. So we came back for a second year. Okay. And so that's sort of where that came from. And like I say, it was interesting to sort of see what True Believers would have been if we'd have gone with the original plan before I went insane and was like, let's go big.
Do you feel pressure on you to do it every year now, Stu? Do you think you've started it, so you've got to keep going? Is there a bit of that?
I don't know. With the summer one, I sort of discussed it with you. With 2019, we're going to look at how we are going to move forward as True Believers. So we'll keep the February event, but look at doing something different, possibly for the satellite events. And we want to move more into the inspiring and sort of nurturing, for want of a better term, creativity and that sort of thing. So looking at events that are more focused on that.
Okay.
So kind of things like, I don't know, workshop days or something that's under the True Believers banner. So I guess True Believers is the overall sort of name of it, but it's True Believers Presents, whatever it will be.
Yeah, and it's an extension of what we do online, so where we do like the Draw Something Sunday, where we just put it up each week for people to, just spend a couple of hours on the Sunday afternoon just drawing something and then sharing it and building up a community. And that's been going really well, actually. It's,
I think one thing I've noticed about these sort of events as well is, especially the indie events, workshops are just getting bigger and better all the time. You know, there's a real boom in those. Dan, you've done a couple of those, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, they're great. I mean, where people pay the ticket price and then they're getting something for the, for the money.
Yeah, definitely.
Rather than just walk around buying stuff.
Yeah.
It took us a couple of years to build towards workshops because we didn't want to do them if it was going to seem like we were doing them half-assed, because it's a disservice to both the event and the people taking part in it. And Andy had been doing life drawing classes, so we sort of dipped our toe in that with that he could run a life drawing class.
His are sort of mostly naked, though, aren't they?
Yes, but when we do it at the event, we get one of the cosplayers to be the model, and then we do a quick half-an-hour drawing session where he breaks it into different chunks. And you can either, draw the whole model or just focus on the hand or whatever you want to draw, whatever area you sort of feel works. And we get all different kinds of people doing it. We get people who are tabling at the event, getting somebody to cover their table and come up and take part. And we get people who are just like, I've never done life drawing, I fancy giving it a bash. And it's free here, so they sort of take part in it. And it proved to work out really, really well.
Do you think those sort of workshops and things like that are becoming like more important to like the success of an event, because I always hear like whenever people walk out of like a workshop or like kids are making their own comics and stuff. I know Sarah Millman's done a few sort of making comics sort of
she's doing one for us at the summer event. Doing a making a zine one again.
And you know if a kid's made their own comic and they walk away buzzing, they're going to want to do that again, aren't they? You're almost like you're feeding the next generation, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's what it's about. I mean, we always said we wanted True Believers to be about inspiring creativity. Both Andy and I walked away from the first event with a real buzz to create something. And, as it's progressed, doors have opened up. So Andy's like working with Tony now, and he's been doing other things. He did the print for Cognition. For Ken Reynolds.
Yeah.
And, I sort of actually started writing things, and I sent a script out to Susie Gander to have a look at.
Nice.
And, as far as I know, she's not like stabbed herself in the eyes and
far to her laptop. She has gone a bit quiet online. I don't know.
No, I've ruined her for everybody.
Yeah. All right. Here's a question for you. When it comes to the indie events, Are workshops increasingly more important to people that like visitors than panels?
Ooh. That's an interesting one.
I think they add some extra value to the event. I think there's still a slight battle of getting people to take part sometimes, because there's that sort of anxiety of, I don't want to do this in front of all these people. But the beauty of the small press events is, and the people who run the things for us, is that they're so friendly and welcoming.
Yeah.
That people feel comfortable to get involved. It's just sort of breaking that, as with most things with indie comics, it's about breaking that barrier.
Yeah. Because it can be quite difficult to get people to go to panels, like, especially if you haven't got like a 2000 AD artist on there, if you haven't got a Marvel name on the panel list, and it's a bunch of indie creators. We've all done them. We've all been on these indie panels.
Several of our panels have had like 3 to 5 people just sitting in the front, and bless the people who are on the panel, is that they go through with the panel.
If you
had a television celebrity or something and there were 5 people sitting in there, they wouldn't do the panel, they'd walk out.
Yeah, and I can guarantee that those 3 to 5 people that were sat there walked out thinking, that was great. You know what I mean?
Because you become, we've had that where we've had that many, and they become part of the panel, and you start chatting to them, because they're mostly generally, for ones that we do, they're people we know, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And it'll just become a big conversation. And I like that sometimes, you know.
Well, that's it. And for all you know, those people are then going to go away, and at the next event they see you're at, they're going to say to their mates, oh, we need to go to this panel. I went to the last one. It was cracking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the same thing is
reaching people one at a time to a certain degree.
Yeah. Same thing as working, doing a workshop. Like, you're drawing stuff, and then you become someone to them that's just not a nameless face, and they might come and check out your comic. I think definitely as well, kind of age range wise, if you kind of, you're a parent and you're bringing in some young kids into a comic con, maybe they've never done it before, but you kind of want an activity for the kids to do just to keep them entertained for 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because they're not going to be interested in standing in front of a table where
two
adults are talking.
Yeah.
Regardless of what it is. So you need the things, whether it's just the simple coloring sheets or, you know, create your own mask, or whether you do things like we have a big sheet of paper that anybody can just sit and draw on throughout the day and that sort of thing. And it's just having something that engages with kids and ideally gets them creating, whether they do it in the day or take the sheets home with them and do stuff.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing it, like if you a family orientated event, sometimes those people aren't going to be able to make it to panels. Because like you say, you know, the adults may be interested in it, but the kids might not want to sit there for 45 minutes listening to someone that they don't know. So that's the importance of workshops. Although I will say, the next True Believers is 2 absolutely fantastic panels.
Isn't brilliant there, Tony? Ones.
Yeah, brilliant ones.
Yeah, PG-13 though. Yeah.
Your one,
well, scan the room. If there's no kids, go as blue as you want.
Oh, God. It's in a church, isn't it?
It's a priory.
Yeah. All sorts of things happening. Well, we've done that before. Let's face it.
Tony's been in the graveyard.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Doing rubbins.
That's what I did in that graveyard.
Be careful where you're walking if you decide to walk.
On our panel.
Yeah. So what keeps you coming back to do events in Stuart?
Just a general love of it. We've always said that once it stops being fun or people don't want it anymore, then we'll stop. But as long as we love doing it, I mean,
you visit a lot of these events as well. I mean, we've done a few sort of small events, and then you popped in as a visitor, haven't you? And we've always had a good catch up.
Yeah, I tried. If they're local, I try to get there. I get one Sunday off a month, one Saturday off a month. So it's difficult to hit as many of them as I'd like to, but. But yeah, I try and make it along, especially like the Swindon one, because Sarah's been a massive supporter of True Believers since the beginning.
Yeah.
Bringing her
mailer or something, is that right? Did she?
Yeah, she did a thing about Upfest in the last mailer.
Right, okay. Yeah, of course she did. Yeah. Okay.
So, and she named the mailer, or one of her kids named the mailer, because then they started referring to True Believers as Troobs.
Right,
and that
nice.
Sort of stuck and came about from that, so that's where that came from. But don't want to bigger up too much, you might want to cut the profits, but not that there's any profits.
You mean we're not getting, Tony, you didn't tell me we're not getting any.
I'm getting paid, mate. I don't know about you.
What,
you weren't supposed to tell him, Tony? part of the Hush deal didn't you understand? The brain envelope.
I get too excited.
I know.
I mean, away
from that conversation like Bill Clinton.
The thing is, if you're doing an indie event, you're already sort of, you're fighting an uphill sort of battle anyway, aren't you? I mean, we all do it for the love of it, but you have to shout even louder than normal. And God bless anyone who does these. I mean, we had the Wimbledon Comic Arts Festival. Rick Jackson. Was it Comic Arts Festival? Did I get that right? Because you guys were there.
I think it was. I can't remember the exact title.
Yeah, but that was a similar sort of small press event, wasn't it? Full of workshops and stuff, and you know the amount of work that goes into organising like these smaller events. Because I mean, whether people out there know, like we've talked about organising stuff before, you know, on the WhatsApp group when we're not like sending dodgy pictures to each other. and we've thrown these ideas about, but it's very daunting. To you know, even begin to dip your toe into that organizational.
It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
but it is having the time commitment to do it because it does, especially if you've got a day job and family responsibilities or whatever else on top. It does take up a lot of time, but it's a hobby, so
yeah.
I was tried it with this inquiring to like half a dozen places about the spaces they offer and prices and stuff. And I had to chase people up like two or three times just to get a fucking initial response to them. It was maddening. I'm not in events or anything like that, so I don't know if that's standard.
Yeah.
But how do you find it, Stuart?
Not too bad. I mean, we've been lucky in that we've always worked with the same events until next year where we've had to move, unfortunately. But so we've always had a fairly good relationship and we've built up enough of a reputation that
How did you start that? When you had to build it from the beginning, how did you start thinking about contacting people? You know, was there always one place in mind, or did you shop around?
Like I say, originally we were going to do it at Blackfriars because we'd done the short film festival there. Okay, so we sort of knew the venue, and I had a good working relationship with the Guild Hall in Gloucester, which run that. So we'd looked at that, we'd looked at the Guild Hall, and then we sort of, as we talked about it and the things we wanted to do, realised we were going to need a bigger space because we wanted to run the cosplay stuff as its own sort of event within the event kind of thing. So that it wasn't, because there's nothing worse than those events where you have a cosplay parade going up and down in front of the tables.
It's a bit annoying.
Because if I'd paid 30, 40 quid for a table and then nobody could get to it because there was a cosplay parade going in front for a good hour of the event, I'd be pretty pissed off.
Yeah.
So we wanted to do it so that we could run that stuff separately.
For somebody who's never been to a cosplay parade, that may surprise you, is it like a catwalk thing? Do they sort of walk up and down and do a little turn at the end?
At the race course, we do a catwalk. Yeah. Some do it as a parade. Some do it where you just sort of walk up a couple of steps, do a dab on a mock stage, and then walk off.
Right.
And some do it as competitions. We always did it for free because we always thought it was a competition. Then
there's
one
a proper good atmosphere there. Good. I mean, I remember I went to get a cup of tea, I think, one year, and it was halfway through the event, and I think it was happening near where there was a concession stand. And it was a right atmosphere there. It was really buzzing and like busy because, I mean, cosplay
like
is
a sexy one.
Yeah. Well, that was just because I was there. But you know, cosplay is, it does bring a massive element to these events. I know some people will grumble about it, and I know I have in the past, but also top marks to the people that do these amazing costumes. But it does bring a level of atmosphere and, you know, a level of fun. But like you're saying, Stuart, it's good to have a focus for it, so to get it away from all of those tables.
It does, and I've noticed more cosplayers seem to be venturing down onto the floor and actually buying stuff sort of towards the end of the day when they're out of costume, or some of them in costume have got somebody with them with a bag and their money. I've noticed more and more cosplayers starting to buy, which I don't know if that's just our sort of event or if it's moving beyond, because obviously I don't really see it at our event, but there seem to be more that are venturing more into, as I think the small press community is so welcoming as well, so they're feeling a bit more comfortable.
Yeah.
Because there's always been that sort of them and us stigma to a certain degree.
Yeah.
It always strikes me as two hobbies that are completely different. They both like the same sort of source material, as it were, but they appreciate it in different ways. and then
it's kind of the same way,
mate. Yeah,
it's kind of the same as the conversation of, oh, do you like Marvel? It's like, yeah, it's like, which is your favorite film?
Yes.
It's sort of that.
Yeah,
two sort of fandoms that don't really, some, it crosses over for a little bit, like a little Venn diagram. There's a portion that crosses over, but you're either one or the other.
Yeah, to me, I mean, personally now, like, when people come up with that response, I'm not too bothered with it, because it's like a, just an absolute, like, entertainment machine that seems to permeate every aspect of life. Do you know what I mean? It's fucking everywhere, like the Marvel superhero films. And if someone said, like, what do you think about Marvel, and they gave you my favorite film, I was like, oh, that's to be expected, to be honest.
Well, no, that's it. And I can't really argue it, because I sort of got into comics through Tim Burton's Batman, the Christopher Reeve Superman film, Lois and Clark coming on telly, the Dirt Max radio things. I sort of got caught in that perfect storm of the early 90s comic boom.
Yeah. I mean, how many people came into comics via the X-Men cartoon?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, yes, we were reading the comics before the cartoon existed. That was why we got so excited about the cartoon. But I've heard many times that people sort of say, oh, yeah, that was my gateway drug to comics. I don't care what your gateway drug is, as long as you get to us.
Well, I don't think the movies are a gateway drug anymore, mate.
Oh, no, the movies aren't. I think that's more about... maybe more about the way entertainment is and the way society has progressed.
Yeah, the way it's delivered as well. Yeah. I don't think, because it's easy, actually, you can access a superhero TV series and a movie at any time now, can't you?
Yeah.
You know, pretty much with streaming and stuff. But I don't think the numbers show that, you know, people are transferring that often over.
Yeah.
You know, I think I think it's almost replaced comics. So people are now into the movies and the TV series because they like superheroes.
That's what I was going to say. I think that, because the films and TV series are being done so well now on a production level.
Yeah, I don't have enough time to watch them all, you know.
No, literally, I mean, there's so many.
I just get really pissed off with the TV series now. It's like the Arrowverse stuff I used to really like, but it's just creating drama for the sake of dragging a story out. Whereas you think comics would work really well on TV, because comics, by their nature, certainly when I used to read them, were episodic.
Yeah.
Whereas now it's about building that water cooler, must-watch TV thing. And you've got characters like Barry Allen, who's incredibly smart, doing incredibly dumb things.
Yeah.
Because they need to drag the big bad villain of the season out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. sort of went smart. They sort of broke their overall season down into three chunks.
Okay.
So you have
to catch up on the last season, but I do enjoy Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I do find it a cleverer program than a lot of the
other. Yeah, it's certainly found its niche now that it's sort of got rid of the baggage of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Those CW shows always start really strong and then they get weaker and weaker and weaker for me.
Season of The Flash was one of the best comic book TV series I've ever seen. It really was superb. Good. They got the casting spot on.
It was like the Mark Waid comic, wasn't it? It just reminded me of that sort of vibe to it, you know.
That's it, but different enough to be its own thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of the Carmine Infantino sort of style of, you know, the way The Flash runs across, and you hear that stream behind him that Infantino was really famous for. And they do in a different way now. You know, a lot of Ivan Reis and all these sort of people do it really well now.
I'll tell you one thing I'm not a big fan of when it comes to these, more in the DC shows, is they ruin it by making it too super. Like, they feel like they have to introduce loads of characters. It's like, oh, you know, it takes away the specialness of, like, I remember that character. That's brilliant. It's like, oh, this week you're seeing a character that, I used to like them in the comics. That's nothing like that character, and they've been killed off in one episode.
That'd be good as well if they built to something, but they don't build to anything. It's like they brought in Wally West, then he did an arc where Barry Allen was sent to prison, spoilers, which would be the perfect time to give Wally West his own little arc while Barry's in prison, but they just wrote it that Barry could keep phasing himself out of prison because he was that fast. So that it wasn't really, there was no real drama. Yeah, but they'd written Wally West out of the show by that point. So it's like that.
The problem, we're at the point now where we're getting TV series that are very popular of characters that aren't popular enough to support a comic. So even the movies like that, you know, Black Panther is one of the biggest movies ever.
Yeah,
and yet the comics don't sell for peas. You know, I know they won an Eisner and everything this year, but they're still not brilliantly selling. Yeah. You know. And Luke Cage, I mean, how long does his comic runs ever last? And
you're right.
But there's more choice when it comes to comics now, isn't there? Like, with the rise in, I mean, certainly what we shout about every week, you know, the independent comics, whether it be your small press or, like, you know, Image or whatever, there's more choice than ever before. So there may be, when there wasn't that, there was just your Marvel and DC, really, or maybe like a Dark Horse. That, back in the day when I was, you know, that 90s boom, that seemed to be the three. I mean, before Image arrived, that was your three. But now, you go everywhere, and because comics cost money, do you know what I mean? I'm more likely to spend my money on an indie comic than probably Marvel and DC these days.
Yeah, I think the problem is because comics are so expensive. I look at a comic and think, right, it's if I was say 16 or 15, I would have, I don't know, 20 quid in my pocket. I would look at a comic and think, right, I can buy that comic and I can read it, or I can buy that comic and worry that I've missed out loads of the story because I've bought those five other comics.
Mm. Yeah,
you know,
you're at the point now where you can buy four issues of The Flash as a comic, or you can go up the road to HMV and probably pick up the first season for about the same price on DVD or Blu-ray.
It's mad, isn't it?
Totally and that mad. Sort of thing. I mean, collectors, those who love comics, will always buy comics until they get stupidly expensive. But gone are the days where you could walk into a comic shop with 5 quid and walk out with about three new issues and a stack of back issues.
Yeah.
It's sort of gone. You've said it before on this, but the disposable nature of comics has gone. They could do with going back to being a bit more pulpy.
Do
you know what my big hope now is, mate? Is this thing where they're selling them out of supermarkets in America?
Yeah.
I know we can't get them over here yet, because I asked Orbital to get them and they said they're not on the Diamond list or anything like that.
Yeah, but they're all exclusives, aren't they?
Yeah, it's a bit early to see how it's doing, but that's my big hope for comics, and I hope that transposes over to what fucking Tesco's and, you know, whatever it is over here.
And I think because it's not on the Diamond list, because it's not on the Diamonds list, that probably makes a big impression, you know, that changes things.
I think the other problem with comics as well is the stories are too big. Like I say, when I used to buy them, they were episodic. It's like you had a standalone issue. You'd occasionally get like a 3 or 4 issue arc. But as a whole, you could pick up any issue and just read that as a complete story.
Keep reading it, and it was brilliant. Yeah.
I saw it going wrong. And I think that's where some small press creators are going wrong, is that they've got this idea in their mind that they're going to do a 6-issue arc over 3 years, and then sort of real life gets in the way.
Tell me about
enough of them don't sort of complete their arc, and it sort of has a knock-on effect to everybody else in that, why should I pick up your comic when I started buying this guy's comic? And he's still selling the 3 issues I bought. And I think, by all means, do a 6-issue series, but make them each a standalone issue that tells a bigger story, but feels like a complete satisfying... Mm. It's like Red Mask. Each issue feels like a satisfying single read.
Oh.
Yeah. For example.
I mean, if I'm being totally honest...
I want my money, Vince.
Now, I mean, if I'm being totally honest, if the learnings I've had now... I would have done them probably like, you know, after my 5 issues is done, I'm going to do like one shots, you know, like 40 page one shots or stuff like that. That's a learning that I've had. I've got 2 issues left to go, and by God damn it, I'm going to finish them because I want to have that, you know, that complete story and the eventual collection. But I like many people, like I wanted to run before I could walk, you know, and that was even way before this show.
But to be fair, when you started, there wasn't things like the Awesome Talk group where people openly discussed what actually goes into it. So everybody had that sort of naive thing of like, yeah, I can bash out 4 issues of a comic over 3 years.
Yeah.
Piece of piss is just a bit of drawing and scribbling.
Yeah.
And comics is one of those few mediums where one weak link in it will undo the whole thing.
Yeah.
Who's the weak link on this show?
That's me.
I don't know, Vince.
The Alterna, where they're doing with the newsprint comics, I think that is the way to go.
Yeah.
Like, have comics.
They've got to be cheaper and you've got to sell more. That's the way you've got to go now. What they're doing is they're making them more expensive and selling less, and it's not working. Yeah.
It should be like, get them cheap, send them out, get into the masses, get them reading, interested in the stories. When you want the glossy paper, that's where you buy it in the trade to keep.
Yeah.
But the comic should be like, you read it and then you give it to your mate, roll it up, stick it in your back pocket or whatever.
Exactly. Comics are not artifacts. They are not things to be just kept by 30-something, 40-something, 50-something year old men.
And it should be an event when they are.
You
know, I remember like... In the 90s, when the quality of the paper was getting better, you know, I thought, oh, this is great. You know, comics are really sort of leveling up. But, you know, I would rather have a better quality paper in a trade and cheaper paper.
Yeah, like the comic you see, we won't hint at it because I know you're talking about it on other podcasts. But the comic we were talking about earlier, Vince, you got a 1982 comic through earlier, didn't you?
Yeah.
And the paper for that, I actually find that paper more easy to read because it doesn't have that sort of reflective, shiny paper.
Oh, when they went to shiny, glossy paper, that was horrible.
Yeah. And
I miss the old paper. I miss the smell of old comics.
Yeah.
Andy and I talked about this, and he thought I was weird for sniffing comics, but they have smell. The ink on your thumb when you're reading it. And it's not designed to be kept pristine and perfect. It's designed for the ink to smudge. It's designed to be read and loved.
Yeah.
It's kind of the great thing in Lorenzo's How to Think When You Draw book is he's put the last thing he wants for that book to be is just pristine on somebody's shelf. It's designed to be read, scribbled in, battered, carried around, used as a reference, earmarked. And that's kind of what comics should be. I mean, I look after my comics, but you know,
some of them I don't. Some of them I'm quite happily read and reread, and they're a bit dog-eared. And I've got, funny enough, I've got a copy of a Swamp Thing, giant-sized Swamp Thing, Man Thing, sorry, in front of me. And I was thinking, it's just, I like the way it's just sort of a bit dog-eared, and I've read it about 400 times, and that's how it should be. And it's
some of my
90s
Superman ones are battered, where I used to just lay them all out on the floor and then draw from them.
Yeah,
yeah,
and that sort of thing, and that's something that's sort of missing now in this collector mentality of it. I mean, as much as I am a comic collector, the collector mentality is kind of spoiling it, and is what made the bubble burst in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Can't talk about the States, but in the UK, when you used to have like the cheap comic that was loads of comics in newsagents and the like, at that point, surely that's like the pinnacle. And then you've gone to this point where you're only selling
the direct sales market.
Yeah, a specialized product in specialized shops and at a higher price. It seems business-wise, seems absolutely bonkers. Do you know what I mean? Why keep on constantly jacking up the price and in putting the product like to a higher quality level to the point where it's the sales are dropping and dropping and dropping? Surely at some point someone must have said, well, this ain't gonna work. You know what I mean? Surely
isn't the idea that this is the sort of thing you want in as many hands as you can?
Exactly.
I think they're relying on, we're of that generation that sort of missed out on something, so now we're so worried we're going to miss out on something key. That's the mentality they're aiming at, that you're going to buy it. So when you get like a limited edition run, or even with toys and that sort of thing, it's like my kid was desperate for one of the Justice League figures and it was a limited run one. It's like, why? If you're selling toys for kids, why make it that it's specifically aimed at that 30, 40 year old collector who's going to put it in a box in the loft in case it becomes valuable one day?
We always said this about fucking action figures. If you're paying £20 for a Captain America action
figure,
absolutely ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. I think that's why pop vinyls are so popular. It's because they're a more affordable way of buying a figure.
Yeah, because they're 10 or something, aren't they?
Well, they used to be. They're about 15 quid now, which I think is a sign that they're on the way out and that they've upped the price. And
Okay. Because I know that you sent us some photographs, didn't you, Dan? They're retro Punisher Captain America figures, aren't they?
Yeah.
That were selling in a shop that we won't mention, but they're 25 quid each.
Yeah.
25 quid.
25 quid.
Yeah, I can't remember what figure it was. My eldest was desperate for, but it was like 30 quid, and I was like, that's not a toy you buy to play with, unfortunately. Like, I know you really want it, but it's just going to fall apart if you play with it. Yeah. They're not designed to be played with.
What other options do they have, though? I mean, like, I've been in Forbidden Planet or something, and you have those 20, 30 quid figures, and what else have you got? You just got plushies, or you got things like that. Where's the other option, you know, that I don't need lots of it, especially if you're a kid. You don't need loads of articulation, do you? I don't care if the knuckles move like human knuckles. Jesus Christ.
Well, that's it. I had a conversation with somebody online because after the Toys That Made Us came out, the G.I. Joe episode, I made a comment that it's a shame that there's no world-building toys like that anymore.
Yeah.
Because there isn't. It's like you get 8 figures at most and then they cancel the line.
Yeah.
Whereas
G.I.
Joe, you could build worlds, you could tell stories. I think that's why there's such a generation of storytellers in our age group.
There was just these little things that they did, which, on the big picture, are simple things to do. But when you're a kid and you're playing with toys, it's just amazing. I mean, I used to love reading the fact files on the back of a G.I. Joe figure. And it added to that character. You know, the fact that Beachhead got up at like 2:30 in the morning and ran like 6 miles just to start his day, I can tell you that. I mean, I think I've got a couple of details wrong there, but those sort of, you know, that sticks in your mind, and it just makes it a character rather than a toy. And that's what That's what they should be. I mean,
that's it. And just the playability of them. It's like you used to have to bite their hand, put the gun in their hand, and then bite it so it closed so it could hold it.
Yeah.
And that's what they were designed to be. They were like made so you could buy them for a couple of quid with your pocket money.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, even the Star Wars.
I know inflation like that, and everything like that. Yeah, the Star Wars toys are ridiculously expensive. Yeah. Like a tenner for a Star Wars toy.
They used to be cheap. You know, when the first Rank came out, because I was 9 when Star Wars came out, and I've got some of the toys. You know, and you used to be able to, you could afford a couple with your pocket money. You know, from Woolworths or somewhere.
Well, that's it. Yeah. You could pick them up in the 1 quid bin.
Yeah,
yeah. That's where I buy figures now. Is I go to Mart or I go when I'm in New York or something. There'll be a bucket, and in it they'll have some old X-Men figures, and you know, I was very tempted
when we went to the London Comic Mart. I was very tempted by that toy store that had like loads of things.
They're only a couple of quid, and there was a lot of like wrestlers, and you had to search through, but there'll be the odd sort of dodgy X-Men figure or something like that for, you know. I just wanted something for my desk.
Well, one thing that I don't understand, I mean, we're talking about these retro figures we used to love, and you know, like the Star Wars figures. Now there's a real boom in making exactly those style of figures, you know, with this exact same packaging of, like, I don't know, the Alien franchise. I've seen ones like that, you know, they're no articulation, but they're just done in that old Star Wars sort of style.
Tiny
little figures.
Oh, the Funko reactive figures.
Yeah, they do stuff like that, don't they? And even those are like,
yeah,
God knows how much. I mean,
they've done some like quite obscure stuff, like Dune, and you know, there's some of those sort of lesser known John Carpenter movies and stuff like that, and they're
did the Rocketeer as well.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. They're just these like really sort of shitty little figures that are almost the same mold for each character, aren't they?
Yeah.
But you're right, though, mate. Even they're 15, 16 quid, aren't they?
People look at them, probably wouldn't take them out of the box.
I think they're designed for that.
Yeah.
It's an interesting age we find ourselves in with those the kind of toys and stuff. I mean, they mention it on one of those. The toys we used to know, was that the Netflix series?
The
Toys That Made Us, yeah. And they said, I think it was in the G.I. Joe episode, that they talk about like this kind of wave of they're reproducing, no, as the He-Man one, they reproduce like toys now, but make them a lot more articulation and all the bells and whistles on it. And then they charge a lot of money. And people who were into it when they're kids now reinvest in the same stuff when they get older. And I guess... Yeah. There's quite a market for it.
Well, DC did it with the Batman the Animated Series figures, which I'll admit I've bought quite a few of, because if you go in B&M, you can get them for about 5 to 8 quid.
Nice.
So, but when they sell them new, they're like 20 quid.
Right. So
that's 20 quid for a figure that, again, isn't really designed to be played with.
Yeah.
It's like my kid's got some, and he's played with them, and you sort of mash them together, and the paint will come off. And...
Would you just bash them up, put them in the airing cupboard for breaking your toys? Or...
We could go
that was between you and me.
Do kids play with toys that much anymore, or is it more kind of game systems? And...
It's just sort of hard drugs and sex now for kids, isn't it? That's the way they've grown up. Yeah,
it's weird. My youngest is really into the Imaginex toys, which are really—they're not very articulated. They're just like small little 1.5, 2-inch figures.
Mm.
And he plays with them, but he started playing with toys from watching videos of kids playing with toys on YouTube. It was really weird.
That's sort of how
he got into playing with toys, and it was a sort of bizarre backward way of doing it.
Are we all being programmed? Is that it's working now, do you think?
But quite possibly, but it got him playing with toys and not looking at the screen, so I'll take it.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And just for those interested, I've just looked it up, actually. The next London Comic Mart, where you can get cheap toys from, is the 2nd of September.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm going to have to get to that.
Yeah.
I knew that'd pique your interest, Mr. Hunt.
Oh.
Yeah. So, that was a good day we had there, wasn't it? It was a good time.
It was a lovely day. Tony was sat down and looked after my bags. Actually, I say that. It's only because he already did all his shopping before I got there.
We had once around, me and you, didn't we? We went once around. I showed you where some stuff was.
Yeah.
And then you went, sit here, look after the bags. There's a packet of crisps.
Why do I always have
it's
that
like going
voice?
Shopping with your nan, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
I just want to go in this record shop. You won't like it. Just sit here with me.
It's like a cross between your nan and little Lord Fauntleroy. That's who I'm when you're out with Insta. So.
Fucking hell. Both barrels there.
To be fair, it's not the worst thing he's been called on a podcast this week.
No, Christ, you should have heard your one. Christ almighty.
Jesus.
Right, I'm not putting the link in the show notes for you.
It's all right, I'll fill your page with it. I'll comment it on everything.
Yeah. Anyway,
back to the convention.
But yeah, yeah. Sorry for that trip down into grumpy old men territory.
Yeah,
we painted quite a bleak picture of comics there. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
comics and toys. But the thing is, I think,
let me just point out that our anthology is only £3. It's actually quite good value.
Yeah, yeah. And you can get it from awesome. What is this?
Big Cartel Awesome Comics.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
But it was a poor part, so wait till they finished it. Don't invest yet.
Oh.
Right, we're not having him back.
Well, Vincent,
you going to read some comic house.
Yeah, Vincent, now his layouts for issue 3 today, and they look top.
Yes, they do. Oh. Yeah, he surprised me with that. They all came in at once. Yeah.
Thank you.
I was having a little snooze on the couch. I looked up, and 12 messages from Vince. Yeah.
Oh, so I didn't mean to wake you up.
Yeah.
Do you normally have a nap?
On a Sunday? Yeah, quite often.
After your Sunday lunch?
Not really. I just sort of put my feet up. Stan was sort of moaning because it was raining and he wanted to go out, and I sort of shouted at him, and then I had a little snooze. It's nice.
Yeah. Right. Snoozing on a Sunday is fucking the best.
Yeah, best. That's why the Europeans live so long, because they have siestas, don't they? They have an afternoon sleep. They reckon it's good for you. Yeah.
I have witnessed us properly turn into old men this week.
Yeah, only 39.
But anyway, no, back to comics and conventions. Obviously there's a lot of small press events happening now. What sort of tips and ideas, because there may be some people like us that are thinking, oh, I wouldn't mind trying to organize an event like this one day.
What are we calling ours? Is it the New Believers? Is that the idea?
Yeah. What rhymes with troops?
Boobs.
To be fair, you'd sell out if you put boobs in the name.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah,
you've just got to look at that fake one again that popped up this week.
Dieter von Teese and Trevor McDonald.
Did you see the thing where she commented on it? It was like, I am not at this event.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, on one of the other threads.
Was that a joke, that thing?
I don't know. I went on the page and then followed the ticket link up to a point where I was like, I don't want to commit to actually having bought tickets for this thing. But it is a scam, because somebody said that the venue they got it listed as being at doesn't exist.
Okay.
It's probably just a joke thing.
What is this?
That's kind of,
what is this?
On the Awesome Comics
group. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a flyer for a comic event. And I looked at it for that doesn't look kosher. It's kind of Dieter von Teese.
As well. Dieter von Teese, Trevor McDonald.
Trevor McDonald.
A wrestler or something. Yeah.
Goldberg. I can't think of his first name.
Bill.
Yeah. Why not?
Should we
get his name Bill Goldberg?
Yeah. Should we get Trevor McDonald for our convention? That'd
be cool. Yeah, I think he'd be good.
Yeah.
You should get him for the fourth issue of the Awesome Anthology. Yeah. We'll get a cracking way to end the stories.
Get a letter from him. That'd be nice, wouldn't it?
Just a full picture of his face on the front.
Oh, God, yeah. We'll sell out of everything.
Pinacon. That's what the event was called.
Pinacon.
Yeah.
They got a picture of a tennis player, but then a name written illegibly so you can't see what it is.
Yeah.
Got wow and yes and more to be announced written on it.
I reckon that's a wind-up.
Well,
this is the problem with events at the moment. It's that there are these scam events or these events that are set up by people who haven't properly done their homework that then bail at a certain point reschedule at a very late date.
That one doesn't even look legit.
Yeah.
I think if anybody falls for it, they're not even spelled sign-ins right. I think if anybody falls for it, then, you know, they should know better.
But if someone's genuinely thinking about organising an event, you know, what's some of the first things they should think about before planning it?
You need to do your homework. You need to price it properly. You need to work out what the venue is going to cost, which should then indicate what you're going to charge for tables. I personally don't think that you should cover the cost of your venue hire in your table cost, because, for example, our venue at the race course is about, it's just under $12,000.
Right.
So to charge then small press people about £100 a table so we could cover that cost isn't right. Plus, you can't guarantee footfall at any event.
Yeah.
It's not possible. Even if you sold out on advance tickets, you can't guarantee they're all going to turn up. There's a surprising number of people who buy advance tickets then don't show up on the day.
Yeah, I've been seeing this more and more, actually.
For whatever reason. Well, I think some people just want to support the event, knowing that they're not going to go, but, you know, they want to throw a bit of support behind it, and they think £10 for a ticket isn't bad, just to sort of, you know, try and keep pushing them on. And then one day, if they've got somebody there that I want to see, the event will still be there, kind of thing.
Okay.
And so I think it's a bit like a Patreon kind of thing, or, you know, a Kickstarter, where people are like, I like the idea of what you're doing, but I can't make it, but I want to see it in the future still, so I'll buy a ticket. I think some things, real life gets in the way, and they're like, I just can't be bothered to try and get my money back, kind of thing. Because most events have a non-refund. It's like, we have a non-refund policy. Once you bought a ticket, unless we cancel the event, we don't refund tickets.
Right.
Same with tables. Simply because if you open that door for people to sort of get wishy-washy about it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You could be forever bogged down with refunding people who aren't coming. So it's just easy, which I think is why some people just don't buy advance tickets anymore. It's that they've been let down by events. Like recently there was an event that cancelled, or several events that cancelled run by the same person that people are fighting to get their money back from. You've got other events that get to about a week before and go, look, if we don't start selling more advance tickets, we're going to have to cancel the event. Which people have paid their ticket fee by that point, their travel fee, and possibly a hotel if it's a weekend event.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I book hotel for quite a few events. Nottingham, I've done one for yours next week. I'm staying on the Sunday. You know, I think it's important for people to remember that. So when they do cancel it, a lot of these hotels, it's a lot cheaper to book a room if you're not doing the refundable version of it.
Yeah, that's it. A Premier Inn is about 20, 30 quid cheaper if you go for the I'm committed to it.
Yeah.
And it's if it's somewhere like London, you can at least go and do something different, I suppose. It's a ball ache, but you've still got a mini break booked kind of thing where you can go and do something else in London. Whereas if you're doing it in Gloucester, for example, there's not a lot else in Gloucester to do, especially on a Sunday.
Come over your house.
Well, yeah, more than welcome. But no, so I think there's that. I think when you set it up, you need to have in mind that there is a point of no return where you are willing to cover the shortcomings of any money that's lost. So it's like every year I put in about $1,000 to $2,000 of my own money, depending on how well advanced tickets have gone.
Right.
And then I'm prepared that I'm going to have to, you know, work my ass off to make that money back, to put back into my account.
Yeah. Okay.
If the ticket sales on the day don't make up for it. And I think people who aren't willing to make that commitment, I basically think once you put it out in the world, you're committed to do it or give full refunds to everybody.
Okay.
If you're ever going to find yourself in a position where you can't do either of those things, either cover it yourself or give everybody a full refund if you have to cancel. And I know there are some events where it's not their fault they have to cancel. It's like, was it Dunfermline?
Dunfermline.
They had to cancel. And they did the right thing in that they were open and honest straight away. And they came out and said, look, it's not our fault we've had to cancel, but we have lost all this money. We are going to get your money back to you, but it might take us time. Because obviously we want to get this money from somewhere. And I think that endears people. Obviously, you still get people that are like, where is my fucking money? Because they're always, because nobody wants to lose money, especially if you paid like 40, 50 quid on a table. That's a lot of money to an artist or a small presser.
Yeah.
But I think if with them coming out and being open and honest, the community got behind, because it's an amazing community that's behind these events.
Yeah.
It's one of the things that makes True Believers worthwhile doing. It's the community that's been built up around it. And the well wishes we get from people, and just seeing people enjoy it on the day, and the people we've met through it.
Yeah.
And that have let us be a small part of their fandom kind of thing. And I think if you're open and honest with those people, they will get behind you. And like in the case of that con, they then had a GoFundMe page set up by one of the people who supported the event to help them pay those costs back. So... But I think there's too many people that see it as a quick way to make some easy money. And it's not that at all. It's a huge financial risk a lot of the time.
You can tell the two types, though, sometimes. You know, I look at an event, I think that's a cash grab.
You know, yes.
You can see that. Because if you wanted to make loads of money, you just invite a load of people who are in the background in Harry Potter and Star Wars and stuff like that. You know, it's an easy option,
relatively
isn't it?
Cheap to get there.
Yeah.
But I've got that name recognition of having been a part of Harry Potter or Doctor Who or whatever.
Yeah.
And you can tell, because when you go, I think if you go to an event and you don't notice, you find your way around without ever really noticing any issues, that's an event that's put the money into it, because you don't realize that the signs were there. If anything, you just found your way around, it's all run really smoothly, you don't notice how well it's been organized. Whereas you go to an event like those, where it's like a little sheet of A4 paper that says panels this way, and then nothing else beyond that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But people seem to be so dazzled by the, oh, I saw Colin Baker, that, you know, for example.
Yeah.
To be fair, when I saw Colin Baker at one of those events, he was lovely. Peter Davison's a miserable twat. But, but that's the other problem with these celebrity ones, is most of them look like they would rather be anywhere else but sat behind that table.
Yeah,
yeah, they do, don't they? Yeah, some of them, I came across a guy from George and Mildred at a convention once.
Fucking hell.
It was a London Film Comic Con. And he was at a table that was in the middle of a sort of crossroads. And he was just sat at this table and he looked the saddest I've ever seen anyone ever look. That's how sad he looked.
That's how Peter Davison looked, because we went to the Western one because my eldest got into Doctor Who, so he wanted to go and meet Peter Davison.
Yeah.
And he sort of, we walked by the table and there was nobody there. And he sort of looked at him. He was like, no, I don't want to see him.
Oh, no,
we've come all this way,
mate.
And it's like, no, I don't. He looks really angry. Nice. And we looked at it, and it was like £20 for a photo taken on our phone.
What? That's unbelievable.
With him, and my kid was like, no, it just seems like a lot of money.
There is a little bit about meeting your heroes, isn't there? There is a problem with that. I mean, as everyone knows, because everyone messaged me, Mr. Seagal was in London this week. And although people don't realise that he and I are close personal friends, you know, it would have been nice to meet him. But what if he was in a bad mood? Or do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, I had a horrible experience with a actor who was in Spaced and Shaun of the Dead. That really put me off meeting anybody.
Really?
Yeah, I had a pretty unpleasant experience with Chris Claremont once, and that put me off it. I stayed away from talking to comic creators for a while after that, because I thought that was just really upset me as a sort of 14-year-old kid. You know? So you've got to be careful.
The washing line one, or the cold one out of Shaun of the Dead, their surnames.
What?
You said that... I'm trying to talk in code.
Yeah. Jesus,
is in a Mission Impossible film recently.
Oh yes, okay. The washing line one. Go on. Yes.
Okay.
Oh, I get you. Jesus, Dan. Yeah. That was a stretch.
He blocked a friend of mine on Twitter because he put as a joke, if they ever did a big screen reboot of Sooty, they should cast him as Matthew Corbett. And he blocked him.
That's fucking cold.
He's 70 years old this year. Do you know that? That's going well, isn't it?
It's still going.
Yeah. I like Sooty. I like it when he used to run and you'd see his little feet running.
Yeah,
you
that was nice.
Yeah.
Really I was cool. Obsessed as a kid with their bedroom.
Oh.
You know the set for their thing, so they had the split level thing.
Yeah.
Just
Who is the girl? What was her name? She'd get it, wouldn't she? Do you know what I mean? If you met her in a nightclub. And she had those little legs and that. She'd be all right, wouldn't she?
Nah, she's always the designated driver. She'd be well aware of your dirty ideas.
Well, she can talk. The other two can't. I mean,
that's it. The other one makes it squeaky. You wouldn't want to go on a date.
Is that better or not?
Yeah.
Don't know.
Anyway.
There's so many dark jokes going through my head right now that I'm not going to say because we'll lose listeners.
Can we not link back to True Believers from that?
Yeah.
One thing kind of, we're talking about Simon Pegg. He kind of like rolled back.
Hey, I never said his name.
Yeah, I did. I was being really horrible to that guy that played Jar Jar, and I feel really bad about it. I was like, oh man, fucking whatever. It's like,
but you know, he's as bad as Christopher Eccleston. Every time Christopher Eccleston is in a TV series, we get another article in the Guardian about what a great working class hero he is, and why they're not more but working class people in TV. And I think. It's just cheap advertising because you want to get in people's faces. Yeah. He's got new and he's got a Mission Impossible movie out now. So we had an article a couple of weeks ago about how he's overcome depression. You're using that as a publicity tour in order to get in a fucking paper.
Well,
it's
the thing
shameless.
That pissed me off about that Jar Jar thing is that he's been a massive prick about the Star Wars prequels to Lucas, the characters in it, and people who are fans of the prequels. And he sort of built a lot of his fandom riding that wave of and the Menace hate.
Yeah.
And now he's just kind of like, oh no, there's a real person behind it. A bit like when I got shit for that Star Trek movie.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, you fucking two-faced prick.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't like Jar Jar Binks, so I kind of wouldn't get out of my way to fucking hate on it.
I wouldn't fucking...
Yeah.
That's where the internet's ruined things as well, is that
I'm not kind
people
of any...
like that made it okay to hate on people. And it's like, whether you like the prequels or not, George Lucas did not deserve the amount of shit that he got to the point where he sold his baby to Disney for admittedly a shitload of money. And Yeah, because he couldn't stand the idea of making the film again, knowing that nobody was going to thank him for it.
One other thing we're kind of ragging on Star Wars is that the it's one of my favorite pastimes at the moment, is that the next one they're going to use unused footage of Carrie Fisher in the film.
Yeah, after promising they weren't going to do that.
And I just think that's monstrous. What are you doing? You're only doing, it's not like some big artistic vision. You're fucking putting bums in seats in a cinema. It's not
because they realize they've killed off everybody else.
Yeah, like, well, they're bringing back fucking that.
So they're bringing back Lando. See, that was what I was expecting to happen at the end of Last Jedi, is when she's like, send out this code, my friends will come. Yeah. I thought it was going to be like a Lando coming in to save the day in a ship kind of thing. And it just didn't build to anything. It was like tension, nothing.
Oh, well, I kind of don't really remember it.
Thank you for listening to the grumpy old nerdy bastards podcast.
Yeah. The other thing with these Star Wars is they said, we're building all new characters, but every single film's advertising is based around who they're bringing back from the original trilogy. And it's just like, oh, fucking, I'm done with
this. It's just fan service.
Yeah.
I don't hate the prequels. I recognize there are flaws with the prequels, but I quite enjoy them as films. And I recognize that for an entire generation, that is their Star Wars. Because I worked with a guy who was 9 when The Phantom Menace came out, and he was like, those are my Star Wars films. It was only till I got older that I sort of recognized that the other ones weren't just those old weird films. And kind of saw them as a whole kind of thing. And
stopped talking to him?
But I, like I say,
just put his head down the toilet and pull the chain.
But I quite liked them for what they were, and at least they tried to do something different from the original trilogy.
Yeah. They tried to do that Hiri's journey.
As it was.
I think it's been discussed fucking to the moon and back, but like George Lucas had a load of creative people around him that helped him fashion the first three. And when he went back to do the prequels, he kind of seemed to have that kind of thing of, I can do this on my Todd.
And he had Rick McCullough, who was very much a yes man kind of thing.
He just didn't really have the skill to see it through, which...
What's the name of the bounty hunter in the comics, who's a rabbit, who's in the Carmine Infantino dream, I think.
Yeah, they don't have it in... I can't remember his
name. Yeah, they need to bring him back. I'd watch a movie with him. It's a bit like Usagi Yojimbo, but he's a sort of rabbit bounty hunter. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, the other problem with that Lucas thing as well is it felt a little bit like people going back and being like, he wasn't that great anyway. It was all these people who built the Star Wars you love. And it's kind of like, stop taking away from the man. Just at least let him have the original trilogy.
Do you know what, mate? All that is baby talk. That's fucking, it's bollocks. Yeah. You know, it's like people who just simplify something that, because it makes it easier to simplify it in their head so they can prove their own point, and it's fucking boring. And it's just a load of baby talk that I'm just sick of. I mean, to the point, it's not the Star Wars movies that have put me off Star Wars. It's the bullshit that's talked about online.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah,
fandom is ruining a lot of things.
Yeah.
And I don't mean the genuine fandom. I mean the people that just go on these. I miss the days where you could be like, I didn't really like that film, but I'm glad you got something out of it. Or I didn't really get that film, but what is it you like about it? And I'll go and give it another look.
Yeah. Do you know what I like people?
And film discussions kind of died. Because of that.
And I think comics is going this way. I think the problem is movies are not just bad and they're not just good. I want to see like Sight and Sound's approach to analysis of a movie where people actually talk about what's in the movie.
Yeah.
People just go, oh, Star Wars is shit. It's almost, that's almost how far we've gone now. You know, when people say, what about this scene and this scene? And then this didn't lead into here, but this bit did. And, you know, you want that critical analysis. Yeah. We're not getting it anymore.
It's the whole thing's gone. It's like the... When I first got into comics, you had the fun rivalry between Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
And that's kind of gone now. There's a venomous vitriol to it all. It's all a bit...
Yeah.
You can't sort of go on a thing now and be kind of like, make a joke about, you know, good because it's Marvel kind of thing.
And this gets us on to something we talked about earlier in the week, is that stupid video about the diversity in comics geezer, who clearly is a twat, you know what I mean? But it was done by a comedian who is completely fucking unfunny.
Yeah,
it was like, the Jim Jefferies thing.
It was just awful. It was just... Both of them came out of it badly.
Yeah. I don't know how you'd watch that and thought, that's a real gotcha for that guy. Because if everyone comes out that bad, like... It's like that fucking Homer Simpson, when he has the interview. And it's just cut together to make him look as bad as possible. I mean, that's the point of it. It's not reporting. It's a comedy show. I don't like either of those two, so I can give.
No, I don't find that Jeffries guy funny. No. I don't find him funny at all. And that diversity in comics guy, I watch what he says because we're on a podcast and I want to see what he says. But it's mostly, I mean, I agree with the odd thing he says, but mostly it's shite. Do you know what I mean?
This is the problem with, it's like in the mailer a few weeks ago, I put about, I want more programs on telly that take comic books seriously.
Yeah,
it's like there was a program during the World Cup about Panini stickers, like focusing on the football ones. And I actually watched it. It was really interesting.
Yeah.
But comics are never going to get that kind of focus as long as there's this fandom mentality that's so fucking childish.
Yeah.
People just aren't going to touch it because for fear of putting out a documentary about Jack Kirby and focusing too much on his Marvel work and not enough on his DC New Gods work.
Yeah. Or they'll put something and out, then you'll all get they'll have is all they have is fucking cosplayers talking about it, you know, or you know, clips of movies and stuff like that, you know.
That's it. And I got no. If you're doing a thing that's about cosplay and it's a serious look at cosplay, and it's not just look at these fucking freaks dressed up as Thor.
But if you're doing something about comics, do it about comics.
Do it about comics. I mean, that's it. It's mainly, like that weird one show thing that they mashed up.
Oh, that's horrible. Yeah.
50 years of the comic convention with 50 years of the Big Macs. Like those two things do not go together.
That was an embarrassment as well. I mean, do you remember Comics Britannia? That was a great little series.
That was a great series, and they In Search of Steve Ditko.
Yeah,
because I linked really that in that piece I wrote that it was a fantastic, and it took the thing. It did a legitimate look at Steve Ditko, and it wasn't biased in any way. Yeah. Like he says in it, it would be easy and lazy to paint Stan Lee as the bad guy in that story. Mm.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of it now, they just want the kind of the media-friendly soundbite. The
well, it is. There's no drama anymore. It's, we're in an age where, rightly and wrongly, they are tearing down famous people. And it's a gen... I'm cautious that we are four middle-aged white men talking about this. But there seems to be... There's a thirst for it now. It's not about, legitimately, this person did this, he needs to be punished for it. There's a media thirst for it now. It's like, who can we go after next? Which is what leads to the James Gunn thing.
Yeah.
And all that is that it's about building that furore online of getting those hits, getting those comments on there, getting those shares. And but it's not one of those a things, balanced look at things anymore.
It seems to be everything's really heavy politicized. And I think a lot of it's coming about of the States. Is like
well, the whole James Gunn thing was because he made comments about Trump.
Yeah,
so Trump, that's kind of why the person went after him, wasn't it? Yeah,
but like the guy, well, I was kind of reading up and watching a couple of videos about it, and the guy who did that basically said, like, this is what the people on the left do. They like someone says something, so they go through their Twitter history and dig out the most kind of egregious examples, them being shits. And he said, I'm just going to do exactly what they did. So when that James Gunn said something about Trump, he just went back and then dug it all up, said, well, check all this out. And I don't agree with either side of that. It's absolutely bullshit, but
yeah,
it's kind of like...
I don't, because if you look far enough back into anybody's past, you are going to find something.
Yeah, fuck me.
Go for 3.5 minutes back in my past.
Yeah.
Something to be fair.
Yeah. Times were different, or jokes were in a context within a conversation that you take a tweet like the James Gunn ones out of context, which the James Gunn tweets were not funny. They weren't...
Yeah, they weren't right.
No, they weren't right at all. And if he'd done it now, rightly, he should have been pulled up on it.
Yeah,
but a lot of people are doing the, you know, oh, why should he get any less of the treatment that Roseanne got? It's like, because Roseanne did that recently knowing what she was doing. James Gunn did that then being a bit of a prick to get attention.
Everything is becoming a brass eye special. Everything.
Yeah, Ryan K. Lindsay on like one of his latest newsletters, which I recommend subscribing to because it's a great newsletter.
Yeah, I subscribe to that.
And he mentioned a little bit about the James Gunn thing at the bottom, just his views. But what is, I mean... I'm not going to brutalise his words or read any of it because I suggest you read it for yourself. But he brought up a good point of like, if you're seeing like one of your friends like making jokes like this or doing stuff like this, be the one to say, look, don't do that, mate. That like take that down. Just stop being a dick. You know,
you can, ways of doing it. You can say something like, mate, you're going to get a bit of shit for that one.
Yeah,
because,
yeah, exactly.
You know, somebody would do that. You know what I mean?
And it was that point of he was yes. These people may post these sort of tweets. Where are the people to sort of say, no, you? Where are their friends to sort of say, what are you doing? You're mad. You know.
Yeah.
I did read something in the week and it said, never put something on social media that you wouldn't be happy with if they brought it out at the interview to your dream job. And I was like, yeah, I try and think about that going forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we're well past the point of don't put things on social media that you wouldn't say out loud, because we say fucking all sorts of things out loud.
Yeah.
You mean? Yeah.
Yeah.
Just remembering the shit you said 10 years ago as well, though. I can barely remember what I said at the beginning of this podcast, so.
Yeah.
But deleting stuff doesn't mean it's deleted on the net.
No.
Everything's archived immediately, so they can find it. So beware.
Anyway,
on that bombshell.
True
believers.
I just want to mention a couple of comments we had, because we put a shout out about like small press and indie events. We said, what are your views on this ever-increasing wave of indie comics events? We've got a couple of replies. Tom from That Comic Smell. He said, since discovering the world of indie comics, I feel like I've almost found a home.
Oh nice. I felt very much like that as well.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But that's also because you don't actually have a home, isn't it, right, Dan?
Yeah.
It's great having so many opportunities to meet and connect with creators and their work. I think it helps and inspires future generations to be more open in getting their work out there. It's great. It also lets people know... These were two tweets, by the way. It also lets people know that there is more things out there than just Marvel and DC. The added bonus is there's a lot of these indie events... usually are more than just sellers as well. There's kids drawing classes and reading groups, etc. Gets more people involved with comics. As always, Tom Curry at this chucklehead, one of our faves, he got in touch. He said, to be honest, in some sense the scene seems to be doing well. Sure, there are some big names that muddy the waters, but overall there seems to be a regular feed of good events to go along to. Yeah, because like I know some of the big events, there's always some scandal every year, isn't there? Something kicks off.
Yeah, we had the Lakes last year, and we always get something, don't we? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
What was the thing with the Lakes last year?
Yeah, no, they were saying it wasn't diverse enough.
A lot of that, though, is that you will send invites out to people. You can't make those people come.
Yeah, I've had that.
So it's like we actively try and invite as many male guests as female guests. And on average, we'll get more male guests come back to us than female guests. And that's just the way it is. Same as guests of color or from, you know, different areas kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's not a specific thing where we go out and we're like, let's just get all the white guys.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. It's who says they'll come to the event. And it's the thing with getting bigger names as well, is that a lot of them, you know, quote unquote, bigger names, because that always sounds like you're doing a disservice to the people who are a guest at your event kind of thing. Yeah. But is that they're not interested in your event because you're either not established enough or you can't afford to pay the things they want to get them there.
Yeah.
Because it's becoming more of a thing with comic guests, is that they've cottoned on that they can get paid to do this. They don't just get their hotel room and whatever else on top. They want a flat appearance fee as well.
Yeah.
Which is the issue with a lot of the working ones. And with ones that are actively working for DC, it's like I've tried a couple of times to get Mike Carlin and a couple of the guys who worked on Superman in the 90s.
Yeah.
Because they're still actively working for DC, you have to go through DC to get their permission for them to come.
Okay.
So it's not just a simple case of being like, hey, Mike, do you want to come to True Believers? And he'll be like, I would love to, but you need to get permission from DC and then be in a small one-man operation or, you know, two-man operation, essentially a bedroom Comic-Con kind of thing, running it in your spare time from your dining room table, to get DC to even look at your email.
Yeah.
Is a struggle in itself, because they're not going to look at that when they've got Warner Brothers and XXX massive companies hassling them because they want an soundbite or something for whatever.
Yeah, I'll just quickly cover what you said there about getting people, you know, contacting people. I started trying to do a thing at Down the Tubes a couple of years ago where I would contact a load of creators who I'd done interviews with or articles on and asked what their three favourite comics were of the year, and I posted this thing. And it turned out to be, I had to go back and look at this for a reason I'll explain in a minute. I had to go back and look and see how many men and how many women I contacted. And it was pretty much 50-50. But just so happened that I got a sort of 70-30 reply rate, men over women. And we got, and this just shows that nothing's quite as simple as we always think it is. Because I got a letter of complaint from a female creator saying this is sexist. And so I had a discussion with John Freeman about whether I should post who I'd contacted. And I decided against it because my argument was she didn't complain because it was sexist. She complained because I hadn't contacted her and done an article on her. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand that. Yeah.
So it's not always that for that reason. For people who are looking in from the outside, they might say, oh, you've had 10 guests on this year and only four of them are women or something. You know, that's not the case. If we put, to be fair, this week, Stuart's kind of a last edition because it would have been two ladies who would have come on. Just so happened they couldn't come on because of deadline issues.
Fortunately, so I'm enough.
Luckily, we got Stuart. But it's not always as simple as everyone sees.
You didn't tell me that when you invited me.
Yeah. It's not always, the world is not a simple place. It's more complicated than perhaps a 140-letter tweet suggests it is, you know.
Well, it is, and it's the same as, like, if you look at the Who's Tabling at Our Event page on our website, some people have a really long bio, and some people just have one sentence, and they write that themselves. But I've had shit from people in the past as, like, why have I not got as much space as that? And it's like, because when I sent you that thing asking you to tell me what will be at your table, you sent back comics and shit.
Yeah.
So that's what I put up.
That's all I ever said.
Whereas then other people take it too far, like, you know, tell us a bit about you. It's like, well, I first started in such and such, and then I've got like a 30-year history that I've got to try and edit down to fit on a page kind of thing. But
maybe in future, put a word count, say like 250 max.
And then they're kind of. I'm happy for people to sell themselves as much as they want in advance, which is what that page on the website is designed to do. It's the same as when we send out the 5-question interviews that we do. Is that it's designed for people to be like, oh, I like the sound of what they're saying in this. I'll check them out on the day.
Yeah.
Majority of people, we send that out to everybody, certainly everybody small press. I'd say we get about 25-30% back, I understand that people are busy, so they've not necessarily got time to do the interview. But then they're usually the same people that will come back to you with an email and be like, quite enjoyed the event, but it was a bit quiet at my table. And it's like, well, did you do everything you could do? And, you know, I will hold my hand up that we take a certain level of responsibility for people. No, we don't set up the event wanting people to not make money on the day. We want everybody to walk away being like, I fucking sold everything. Is the goal of setting up the event? And it's getting people to sort of realize that they can start selling before they're at the table.
Yeah.
And using those tools that are put out to them, because we put out more than a lot of events put out. A lot of events, you'll just get a picture on the website if you're lucky. And we try to do a bit more to build up that anticipation in advance. And sometimes it's a waste of time.
That's good, man. Yeah. I've noticed that some people write only a few lines, and then tossers like me write a fucking essay.
I'll take the essay. Whether people choose to read it or not, or just skim through it, is completely up to them. But it's there, and they've got the option. Whereas if you've just written, oh, I sell comics and shit, or, you know, I'll draw your cat as a zombie, kind of.
Well, we got one more comment from Sir Loxham, which is Ian from the Late's Comic Podcast.
He's actually genuinely a knight.
Yeah, he is indeed. He says it's important when it comes to small press events. It's important, especially in big cities. People can't always get to cons, and let's be honest, they can be too big for an indie to stand out at times. This gives people an opportunity to stand out and have regular comic lovers find new comics. Important, I feel, for the industry. And I think, can't say fairer than that.
Yeah.
What a lovely comment, I think, to end this discussion that I knew would go off the rails.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of on topic apart from the Star Wars G.I. Joe stuff.
That's true.
To me, it comes down to the actual. Stuart is kind enough to organise this, and God bless him. And it comes down to you standing behind your table and being active enough and friendly enough and engaging enough to inspire people to create their own comics and buy yours.
Well, so I think everybody knows that there's an element of risk when you book a table at an event, that it might not get thousands of people through the door. It might massively underperform on the day. That is just the risk. Even events with a solid reputation for getting thousands of people through the door can have a off day.
Yeah.
Sometimes they do.
Sometimes it's great. You know, we've not had a bad convention since our comics come out, have we, guys?
No, not at all.
You know, we sold really well. Yeah.
Well, it's like last year's summer variant was really low footfall, but they were all focused buyers on what they'd come for. So every table I spoke to made their table cost back and more, so walked away happy. And I think sometimes this is the problem with getting back issue sellers at events, is it is getting harder and harder because they want to know your advance ticket sales.
Really? Right.
You know, whether it's, or some, not all of them, but some do. And I can completely understand, because to chuck everything in a van, drive it for 4 hours to, for a one day event, to unload it all, to set it all up, and then have nobody buy it, and then have to pack it all up again at the end of the day and take it all home, is appalling. But it's kind of that catch 22 thing of, people come for back issue sellers. If there aren't back issue sellers, they won't come the following year. So, and then the back issue sellers turn up because they heard there was good footfall the first year. But those people that went specifically for back issue sellers aren't there this time, so your footfall's down a bit. And it sort of creates this never-ending cycle where we all sort of need to commit to supporting each other to get the things people want back at Comic-Cons there.
Right.
If that made any sense.
So before we move on to the shout-outs and the recommends, True Believers is coming up the Sunday the 5th, I believe?
Yes, week today.
So just tell everyone, for those people who don't know where it is or whatever, I know we've shouted about it, but you'll be able to give the proper details. So tell us a bit more about it.
It's at Blackfriars Priory in Gloucester Town Centre. So like a 5-minute walk from the train station, 2-minute walk from the main car park kind of thing. Parking's cheap because it's a Sunday as well, if not free.
Hey.
Or just across the road from the docks. So if Tony wants to go pick up a sailor, he's set.
Yep.
And it's a medieval priory. It's sort of down a little alley next to Prezzo, but once you see Prezzo, you'll find it. We'll have some banners out as well, so people should hopefully be able to find it. But yeah, £3.50 on the door to buy tickets in advance.
It's good value, isn't it?
Kids under 12. Again, it's the perfect event to sort of try and out different pay structure. Yeah. There is an issue within the indie run events, is that our footfall is down, but it's also an issue within the bigger events as well. And I think you need to look at ways of adapting to survive that. So if it's restructuring events so you can offer it cheaper, free events do really well, but I think that largely depends on who you've got backing it as well, because we've done free events that haven't had much footfall.
Right.
Simply because there's not been enough to get the word out. It's getting harder and harder to sort of spread the word about things, especially comic events, because there's so many events out there now.
I think we're a little bit on the decline now. I think there's fewer.
I think we're on the decline. I think people need to start. That's why we're looking at how we're going to redo things. I think it's irresponsible to run 2 comic events a year as an event organizer, because you're just diluting the market even more. You're sort of taking away from yourself, and that doesn't help the people who've got tables at your event. If your foot falls down on one event because people have thought, well, they're going to be in Gloucester in 6 months anyway, so I'll just go to that one.
Okay.
So I think responsible. Plus, there's too many events sort of taking over and doing too many events, and they're burning themselves out, and the quality is going to start to drop. So I think we're better putting our focus back onto the main event and running the satellite events as something different.
Okay, yeah.
That will still have a strong comic, small press focus. It's like we did the evening with Paul Cornell talk. We'd like to start trying to put those things up again.
Okay.
But they're tricky for getting people who are willing to come and talk.
Yeah, they pop up occasionally. I've been to a couple of like the British Library and these sort of places. I always like to try and go to them when I can. They can be really interesting. If you've got the right guests and they're engaging, they're good things to go to, you know.
That's it. And if you're in a big city, it's easier to get people. Whereas if you're in Gloucester, it's a bit more tricky to... Gloucester's one of those towns where people moan there's never anything good that goes on, but then when there is something going on, it's like, yeah, it was on a Thursday and I don't do Thursdays.
This one's on a Sunday.
It is on a Sunday.
Yeah, from 11 till 4?
Yes, 11 till 4. So yeah, like I say, lots of activities for the kids, lots of activities for comic fans, whether you're a seasoned comic writer, drawer, creator, whatever, or just somebody who's interested in finding out what goes into it, there's enough information to sort of ignite that spark in you, get you creating or on the steps to creating. It's like Milmo's creating a zine thing is a simple way of putting together a quick short comic story.
You see
the work that goes into that, and then build up from that, decide whether you've got a taste for it. Same as the panels. It's the idea behind them isn't that it's just going to be people talking about how they write, it's about how they think when they write, what they sort of surround themselves with. Do they sit in a dark room? Do they sit in a cafe? Do they listen to music? Do they and so looking at the hows of doing it and the hows you think when you do it. It's a bit It's like the Etherington Brothers, how to think when you write, how to think when you draw thing. It's not just okay. somebody telling you how to do it. It's somebody telling you their thought process for doing it.
So I should probably cross out, who would you go on a date with out a Little Mix, is one of my questions.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's why.
It's an important question, Tony. It needs to be asked. But
I mean, obviously it's the one that looks like a Bratz doll, but...
Yeah.
Isn't that all of them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's up to you to decide which one that is. I'm being vague enough.
Yeah,
I'm not the kind of person who drops Simon Pegg in it by his name.
There are panels, there are amazing exhibitors, and you can find... What is the website where people can get tickets, etc.?
It is oktruebelievers.com.
Nice. And you can also follow you on Twitter, where you're posting up a lot of stuff about it, aren't you?
Yeah, which is also oktruebelievers, and I'm trying to use Instagram a bit more as well, because apparently that's where the kids go.
Ooh. Yeah, I'm on Instagram. It's a cool place.
Oh, God. Yeah. Well... value of that stock's gone down. Right. Well, we're looking forward to it, and we can't wait to see all you lovely people there.
This cool, Sunday. And I'm glad, and I really appreciate the shout outs and everything you've done for it. The support means a lot.
Oh,
always nice.
You know our PayPal. Anyway, do we have any shout outs before we get into the recommendations?
I've got two.
Go for it.
Congratulations to Dan and Lisa Marie Mallier. On Yay. The birth of Jack.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Yeah, very cool. Nicely done. And also Kev Cooling, who we won't be showing the art yet because he's done a picture for the anthology, which I sent you two guys today, which
awesome.
Is cracking. And it's got all three characters in it, which is, and it, I don't know, it's just brilliant. I'm smiling all over my face when that arrived. Yeah, great stuff. Yeah. And Stuart has also done one for me. He's done a bit of art for the, which I should be giving to you at the, True Believers, Vince, to because I don't understand how you scan things.
Oh, right, yeah, legally. Yeah. Yes, but if you've read the Awesome Comics issue 1 and 2, and you feel like sending a letter or doing a bit of fan art of any of the characters,
we've got a couple of spaces for fan art, haven't we?
Yeah, we've got a couple of spaces now that we've got a fan art page. I love putting together that page, it's great. Send your stuff to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com.
And you'll I might send you a letter of complaint.
Well, we'll print
from anonymous.
Yeah. That'd be interesting. So send it to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com and you could see your stuff in print. So there you go.
I really like that idea. We were really pleased with the last response, weren't we? For issue 2. Yeah, very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm amazed you put mine in it.
Yeah. That looks
good,
mate.
Desperate you were.
It looks great, mate. Loved it.
It does. Yeah, it does. Loved it. Yeah.
So do we have any other shout-outs? I don't.
No.
There you go. So let's get on to recommending some comics or whatever. Who wants to go first?
I quite like Road Trooper.
Well, you're going to have to catch up on that if they make the film.
Yeah. Go on, you go first, Stu. Go on, mate.
Ah, shit. I don't know. I got a couple, sort of, they're both... Well, one's a big-ish one, which is Bendis' run on Superman.
Oh, I read the first issue.
Man of Steel miniseries is really good.
Yeah, really good.
He's sort of captured Superman in a way I've not seen captured for a long time, and it's in the tiny little moments rather than the overall thing.
Yeah, I'll make you right on that. That moment where he's talking to the firefighter.
Yeah, exactly that moment.
I love that moment, yeah.
And in the first issue when he's got Firefly. Is it Firefly? I can't remember now.
Oh,
but and he's saying about he said telling him not to drop him.
Right.
He says, "Oh, that's Batman's thing." It's just a lovely little Superman sort of moment. But it's like I said, I've only read the Man of Steel 6 issues so far, which I would have liked to have been more of a complete self-contained arc. But it's contained enough and open-ended enough kind of thing, but. I was hoping for a bit more like Burns, Man of Steel, where you could read that as a complete 6 kind of thing. But
I know you're a huge Superman fan, aren't you?
I am a Superman fan. It's taken a lot for me to get excited about Superman again. Dan Jurgen's run on the Lois and Clark series that brought the pre-52 Superman back in was really good. And then it sort of went off the boil a little bit again, and it seems to be going back in the right direction again.
Bendis is really safe hands. You know, I just listened to his interview on... Word Balloon, and the level of research that geezer did before writing Superman, he literally went into the archives and looked at I don't know if you follow him on Instagram, but he's well worth a follow on there, because he was showing all the sort of historical Superman stuff he was digging out of the DC offices and Oh, just I saw the enthusiasm like spreads from him, you know, it's like a just spreads out from him around Superman. And that's what I haven't bought a Superman comic for 5 or 6 years. That's what made me buy it, you know.
I mean, I sort of gave up when the Mike Carlin era ended around the Death Return of Superman. That was sort of my period of Superman. And then
okay.
I, you know, became an edgy teen and started reading Batman. But
yeah.
But yeah, I've sort of gone back to Superman as it goes. And it's like I say, it's just superb sort of how he's captured Superman again.
Yeah. He should be the figurehead for the DC Universe. He should be that character. He should be the big Boy Scout and, you know, the reverse of the Batman thing. And he really is in this issue.
He should. I think there's been so much focus on trying to make Superman like Batman because everybody loves Batman and nobody really likes Superman.
Yeah.
Whereas if you can get Superman right, I think Marvel did it perfectly with their Captain America movies, certainly the first couple.
Yeah.
Where they really captured that big Boy Scout element and did it in a way where you weren't like, what a fucking dork kind of thing. You genuinely liked him as much as you liked Robert Downey Jr.'s Tony Stark, and that's the way you needed to approach Superman. It's not about making him Batman and giving him walking around being broody and listening to Soundgarden. It's about that he was raised by two wholesome earth people, and that should be what comes across in the character. That's where he gets his moral compass from. That's where his compassion is. I can't remember what said it, but the Superman's greatest power was his heartbeat slightly different to everybody else's. Right. So he had a greater compassion for, and it's not about what he can do. It's about what he chooses to do.
Yeah. It's that moment in Superman 1 where Pa Kent says to him, you know, you've got that responsibility, you know, you got
it. Well, it isn't. It's
and that just resonates for me that, you know,
it's that whole thing about that. That's the one thing he can't do is save his dad.
Yeah.
Which they just ballsed up in Man of Steel.
Which sort of, it's just ridiculous.
There's a great film called Super Bob. It's like a small
Seen that. It's about like a geezer in Peckham who's got
Brett Goldstein. Yeah, he's a postman who gets hit by a meteorite. And it's sort of done as a docu-style about him trying to find a date. But there's a fantastic moment in that where he arrives at a car crash. And he sees all he can do is sit with the woman who's dying in the front seat. He can't do anything to save her.
Yeah.
And that moment encapsulated Superman on screen better than anybody's done it in about 20 years or so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a quirky, weird little movie, but it's really, really good.
Yeah. So that's, I saw that. I think I saw it on Sky or something. I downloaded it. But so it came out, what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I'm going to say something like that, is it?
Yes.
Yeah. It's good fun. Yeah. But it's like just a geezer from Peckham who gets superpowers. It's like South London superhero, you know. But
And you've got all the look. But he's licensed. He can save people, except for on a Tuesday. He has to have a designated day off, which is a Tuesday. So he can't do any superpowered stuff on a Tuesday. And you've got like this whole montage of him checking out his powers and somebody calling to him while he's doing his laser beams from his eyes. And he just like zaps the guy. He's like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Cool. That's a good choice, man. That's a great comic, that Man of Steel. Yeah, I have to say, I really like that.
Yeah, I need to check that out.
It's well worth it picking up as a trade if you don't want to buy the individual issues or, you know, Comixology or wherever you choose to buy.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm just looking at it now, and I think it's like, it's about page five. You don't see Superman for the first few pages, and then page five, you get this sort of immediate double page spread of him carrying two people off.
Criminals talking, and they're like, be careful what you say because he picks up on these key words.
Right, okay.
And they're like, he's not even in town, he's not going to know. And it's like, you know, where did you hide the money kind of thing? And that's what alerts Superman to him. And then he, about page five, like you say, he swoops into the room and takes him.
Yeah. And it's Ivan Reis on the pencils and then Jay Fabok. But yeah, brilliant stuff. Yeah, really nice. Yeah.
It's stunning because Superman's one of those characters that's difficult to draw, right? You've got to get that face friendly enough that he looks approachable, but mean enough that you wouldn't fuck with him.
Yeah.
And it's something that, as good as Jim Lee is at doing Batman, I never liked his Superman because he always looked a bit too unapproachable. There wasn't that friendly look in his face.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, he's got that stern look, hasn't he? Yeah.
I'll add that to my wish list then.
Good.
Lovely. Right, who's next?
Go on, V, you go next.
Oh, I don't really have a proper one so much this week. I've been drawing constantly. I'll probably pitch in on yours anyway, but when I draw, I like to sort of have something on in the background, and I watch a lot of like behind the scenes sort of movie documentaries and stuff. retrospectives. And I signed up to Shudder on Amazon Prime recently, so there's loads of horror ones, which is brilliant. I love those. But people might have seen it recently, but I saw the You're So Cool, Brewster, which is the Fright Night documentary.
I did a drawing of it
like while I started watching it. I thought, oh, this is great, so I just started doing a drawing. It's 2.5 hours and it's proper in depth and brilliant, so I recommend that.
Have you seen the Never Sleep Again Nightmare on Elm Street?
Yes, I have seen that one. And if anyone has any others to recommend me, I've probably watched a lot of them via YouTube or whatever, but please send me your recommendations for behind the scenes, sort of, usually horror movies. I love.
Have you seen Hearts of Darkness, which is the Apocalypse Now
one? I haven't seen the Apocalypse Now one yet.
Mate, that is amazing.
I have a good one that I'm going to. Well, I've heard good things about is the Island of Dr. Moreau.
There's amazing as well.
I've forgotten the name of the filmmaker that was going to do it. And then
he did Hardware as well, didn't he?
Yeah. That's next on my plate.
That's good.
Documentary about the making of Alien 3 is really good if you like ones about films sort of falling apart. Mm. And that's on the official box set.
Because
it goes into the stuff before Fincher came in.
Yeah, brilliant.
I can't remember the guy's name now, but he was like
Wooden Planet. Amazing.
Which they're doing as a comic now, aren't they?
That's right. Yeah,
that's really interesting. There's like bits in that where it's like the original director, somebody comes up to him and says, "You do know your assistant is reporting on you to Fox at the end of every day."
Fuck.
Oh, dear.
I'll tell you what's good as well, mate, is My Best Fiend, which is the story of Werner Herzog and Klaus Kinski's movie relationship.
Yeah, you said about this one.
And this is the one where they actually plot to kill each other during the movie.
I need to watch that. Brilliant.
And Overnight's really good as well. The one about the director of Boondock Saint.
Oh, yes, it is good.
Boy Duffy. Yeah. That's a really good documentary.
Dark. That's dark. Yeah.
About a man just losing his fucking mind.
Three I'd recommend is the Tim Burton Batman one, The Death and Return of Superman. That's a really interesting one. When they pitched the film to you in the documentary, it's like, I wouldn't mind seeing this. It sounds quite interesting.
Yeah. See, the problem I had with that is that I'd read most of it online by the time the film came out. Didn't really show me anything I hadn't seen already. It was interesting, but it wasn't...
Yeah. It didn't show you anything new.
But I mean, apart from seeing some...
Isn't Neil Adams
test-ish
in that?
Footage of...
Pardon?
Isn't Neil Adams interviewed in that?
I think he might be, you know.
Because I remember chatting to the director at Orbital, and he was saying that Neil Adams was probably the worst person he'd ever had to interview.
Fuck.
Yeah, he was just so sort of know-it-all and pompous. He said Neil Adams even kept changing the camera angle and stuff. And he said, "Can you get your hands off the camera, please?"
I'm just staying out of Neil Adams' conversation.
Two others, you've probably seen him already, Vince. That's the Predator one, which is fucking hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, what, for the footage of the chicken?
But the one where, like, Arnie and Jesse Ventura having a contest about how big their arms are.
Yeah, the biceps. Yeah.
Going down the gym at, like, 3 a.m. to get your workout because you don't want to see anyone else to see you working out and straining.
The bit about the guy who played Billy, where they say he had bodyguards not to protect him, but to protect everybody else from him.
The other one's
like a fun shoot.
The RoboCop making, I was really
good. I've watched that one, it was really good,
I'm waiting for that one that I backed on Kickstarter about 2 years ago to finally come out. The RoboDoc one.
Yes, and the guy that people run the Robo Archive.
Yeah.
They seem like good people, so hopefully they...
Oh, yeah, I generally think they're doing it. They just, every time they seem to have a final cut, somebody else says they'll speak to them. I think the only person they haven't spoken to now is Peter Weller, who's flat out refused.
Yeah.
Is that the one about the remake? That's a good film.
No, that's amazing. It's like the RoboCop 3 of RoboCop films.
Oh, God. Yeah. Anyway, so that was my one. Who's up next, Dan?
Shoko. Yeah, I'd go next. I've got Punisher, the Platoon, the trade.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It's great. It's really good. I quite like a lot of aspects of the Punisher, and one of my favourites is Bourne, and this is a prequel to that. And I don't know how familiar the readers are or the listeners are with Bourne, but essentially it's the last story of Frank Castle in Vietnam and how he changes from being who he is to laying the seeds, the groundwork of him becoming the Punisher. And in this book, it's where Frank essentially first turns up in Vietnam, and he's not the character you know him as, but you see him start taking those first steps. And when the third book, I call it the third book because I think he mentions like this is the first, he feels like Bourne is the third, and there's a second one that maybe he might do or not.
Yeah, I think he's talking about doing it now. I think
yeah.
So the third one, like Frank has arrived at a destination where he's become this absolutely cold-blooded killer. But when the character first turns up in the platoon, and the way the story told is very different, as in he's a man who doesn't know really what he's fighting for, but he focuses on keeping the members of his platoon under his command alive, and all of them get onto the other side of the war. And yeah, the interesting part is where this story ends. There's obviously something, the story between this and Bourne, where something changes in Frank, or he starts taking darker steps.
Yeah, I do wonder
steps.
How it's going to link together, actually, even if it will, because this is such a different feeling story
In
Platoon, because this one it definitely feels more like a war comic. It felt more like the NAM than Bourne did. And certainly there was... This one was more realistic, if you can say it in that sense.
Yeah, I mean, if you took the Punisher off it, you wouldn't really kind of... You could get away with it not being a... You wouldn't know if the average person picks it up. But the kind of storytelling method is that a reporter comes to speak to the remaining members of Frank's first platoon and how they knew him before he became the vigilante.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. I like the way you have characters talking about another character who's not present. It builds them up a lot more.
Yeah.
I think it's a great storytelling technique. And
it's the way they talk about him with such reverence, and the fact of the man we knew.
And they won't say stuff, will they? Which I like, because you've got the main character who's interviewing them is a sort of a reporter who's appeared in previous stories, isn't he?
Yeah.
And then they won't reveal certain stuff. You know that they don't want to give it away because they've got such respect for the man. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he literally kind of goes above and beyond to try and make sure all these men are fine, like to the point where he kind of, without spoiling stuff, there's a village that they're told to check out, and he asks what's the MO with this, like what's going on. He said, well, last time we caught a bit of shit. So rather than kind of risk any of these guys' life, he just calls in an airstrike
and just
blows the entire village apart. And it's those first steps of him
like
doing stuff like that, that,
and the artwork's beautiful. The focus on Frank Castle's
Goran Parloff is a beast, isn't he?
Yeah,
absolutely kills it. I mean, yeah.
So, have you read the Fury book that came before this?
No.
That him and Garth Ennis did. Equally as good, mate. Equally as amazing. Yeah, just brilliant.
Yeah.
And the art in it is there's a slightly retro feel to the pages, aren't there? You know.
Yeah.
It's just got this sort of... It's a line between caricature and action. There's certainly that European feel about the pages as well.
It's lovely. Yep. The artwork, the colouring. I'll give the shout out to Jordi Belair, the colourist. Rob Steen on Letterer. He just does fantastic work. It's really great.
Yeah. I'd read the Smurfs if those two people did it. You know what I mean? It's just a perfect storm of creators, isn't it? Those two, Garth Ennis and Goran.
Punisher's one of those characters that there's so much depth to him. It's just... He doesn't seem to translate well to film. I think there's so much more to the character than the way they then portray him in a film and the Netflix TV series. It doesn't quite seem to go into the depth of the character.
It seems like different people to me.
I love that TV series. But anyway.
The TV series is great to a point, but it suffers that same thing that the first season of Luke Cage did, is that it hits that middle part and it doesn't really know what it wants to be anymore.
Right.
I will respectfully disagree with you, but that's because I have strong opinions on some of those other TV series, and we won't get into that now.
That's fine. I think the thing with Luke Cage was it was great when it was doing the Hero for Hire stuff, and then it just seemed to dump that, and there was a little bit of that with Punisher. I would have quite liked to have seen a bit more of him being Punisher.
Episode 10. Has anyone seen episode 10 of the new Luke Cage series?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
That's what it should be.
Yes. Yeah.
That's what the whole fucking thing should be, that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I won't ruin it because a lot of people won't have seen it, but when you get to that episode, I feel that I wasted 11 hours of my holiday by watching that series, apart from episode 10, which I thought, right, this is where I want it to be. This is exactly what I want it to be. Yeah.
Whereas like when Danny turns up, that's kind of great.
Right, that's the bit I wasn't going to ruin.
Anyway, Punisher, great. I mean, I would love to see how Ennis kind of handles the transformation of this guy who seems genuinely to give a shit about the people around him. But it's a very interesting character. Like, there's some Punisher one shots and stuff that really kind of do the character justice. But when it's just kind of like jumping around shooting people with guns, it's not for me what it's about.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
no, that's all like the lazy go to with Punisher.
Yeah,
yeah, This is the highest recommendation from us.
So, and have you seen that Mike Zeck has done a variant cover for the new series?
Ooh, no.
Yeah. Because, you know, it's been rebooted. You know, they were renumbered and they went back to original numbering. So okay. I think the last issue was 288 or something, where they're going back to issue one. I think Zeck has done a variant for 4, which looks very like... it's a bit of a homage cover from a previous one, if you see what I'm saying. Yeah, nice. Very similar to that print I bought from him when we were chatting to him at similar to that.
Is it one where he's up against the wall with the two pistols? Yeah,
similar to that. Not exactly the same, but yeah, very similar sort of feel to it. Lovely. Yeah, and it looks gorgeous. Yeah.
Lovely. So Tony, take us home.
Okay, so we're all aware of John Milton's overlong poem Paradise Lost, aren't we?
Yeah.
The story of Adam and Eve and Lucifer.
Yeah.
I'm sure we've all read it. Right. Well, that is, it's not the same. This is called Paradise Lost, but it's got nothing to do with that for you. It's an A5 comic that I picked up at LCAF about a month ago now, and it's written and drawn by Don McKenzie. It was only £3. It tells wordless stories. We like, occasionally like reading a wordless comic, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, we've talked about this before. It's kind of a nice little palate cleanser almost, isn't it? To sometimes something that's maybe a little overly wordy, or we've ploughed through and it sort of breezes through and it's quite nice. And this is a wordless, but it's a morality story about a bloated and sort of flash, fat Wall Street banker whose plane crashes, and he finds himself typically on a desert island. He struggles to survive, as you would, and he loses his mind. He loses his gut, and he gets a lot of hair. That if you have a look at the Facebook page today, I posted a picture from it where the hair is just like growing out of control and filling the panel in a sort of Medusa kind of way. And he passes out, and he's ready to die. And his eyes are closing, and then they do that thing where it's almost a black page, apart from like the crack in the eyes where you're opening your eyes to find out he's been saved by a local tribesman. All sort of in really sort of heavily inked black and white. This tribesman looks after him and he cares for him and he shows him how to make a raft to escape. And I'm going to spoil this story to a certain extent, but he does escape and he finds this liner and he heads back to America. And you would think that might be the end of the story. But, of course, this is totally satirical, this story. And I'll leave it up to you to work out whether a Wall Street banker, what he would do after he arrives back home after having had discovered this sort of desert island that is untouched. Does that change him? And I'll let you decide what happens there. I'm going to say, probably not. The art's like properly chaotic. It's there's a touch of the Mar food about it, but it's more structured than that. I think it's more structured into panels. It's got a feel of maybe a sort of newspaper political, you know, not political strips, but you look that one panel political joke that you occasionally get in some of the sort of bigger newspapers, the Times and the Guardian, all this sort of thing, which works well because I know that he's worked for the Guardian quite a lot, Dom. The inking and the art, it looks like he's done it with a Sharpie in certain pages, real heavy inks, real thick lines. But it's paced really well. I really like the way he's paced it. He uses double page spreads, I think 3 times in the space of 20 pages. But they're done as a sort of mirror image at two of them, certainly a mirror image at the start and the end of the story to show the change that has happened in the story to the place and to the person. They also are used to allow the readers sort of just to slow down. With a wordless comic, you tend to go a bit through it a bit faster. The breaks between the panels need to be more clearly designed for the flow of the book sometimes, and you sort of breeze through it. But these two big double page spreads allow you to sort of take pause and watch and see what's happened and reflect on the story. I won't give away the ending because there is a sort of satire and there's a gag at the end. But what he does is he does a gag at the end, and then 2 pages later he does another gag that sort of makes you think, oh, okay. And it sort of bends your mind a little bit further round the block as to what happened. Very clever. I don't know, Dom. Actually, I'm not even sure if I met him when I bought this comic. But he did another book which you probably would have heard of called Tales of the Old West. Does that ring any bells?
No.
I've seen it at a couple of convention tables. He's done, if you look at his Twitter, which is at Dom McKenzie 1, he does some almost seemingly like daily illustrations, coloured illustrations, which are really good. And he's only 29, which is makes me jealous because he's clearly a young bastard and quite talented. If you go to dommckenzieartstore.bigcartel.com, you can buy examples of this. It's 20 odd pages, black and white, for £3. Not bad. Not bad money wise. And if you go to www.dommckenzie.com, you can find some examples of his artwork and where else he's worked and stuff like that. Yeah, really interesting stuff. I really liked it. It was the last one in my pile from LCAF. You know, you put things off, don't you? Think, oh, I'll have a look at that later. And it's the last one. And I was looking for something to review on the show today, and I found that. And I was really pleased that I finally sort of dug into it. Very good stuff. Yeah. There you go. That's my one.
Nice one.
Nice. Yeah. Plenty more to add to your wish list, folks. So, yeah, there you go. I mean, my show notes is... always builds up by the end of every show. But we hope you enjoyed this episode. Get in touch with us, let us know what you thought, if you disagree with anything we said, or perhaps you just want to tell us you love us. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. likewise, letters and such, tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com is the way you can get in touch with us via email. You can follow us on Twitter @theawesomepod. We've got some upcoming Three Amigos shows. We've had a lot of guests for quite a few weeks, and I think we're gonna go.
So we've still got a load of questions left over from
that. But now you scraped the barrel.
The barrel has been scraped, so now we're going it alone. No, but you know, we'll put shout outs for questions, etc. And like Tony said, we've still got some questions left.
Yeah.
So who knows what will happen over the next couple of weeks? But if you do the Book of Faces, then like us on facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And if you just want to talk about comics or find out about, I don't know, shows, events, how to make books, tips and advice, and all kinds of things, then go to Awesome Comics Talk. That's the Facebook group where all the fun stuff happens.
At the risk of sounding like I'm blowing smoke up your ass, that group is a godsend.
It is good
for this community.
Good.
For all the talk that there's nowhere for people to go to talk about small press stuff or get advice on that, that is the page you need to be at.
Oh, thanks.
You can put out any question. There's no people jumping on there going, what, you don't know how to format for printing, you prick. It's all like, you know, this is what I do, this is what I do, and you can cherry pick through what sounds like it'll work for you and try it. And it's really supportive. It's like, I've gone on there recently for various things. Like, somebody suggested we start listing on the website which tables take card payments.
Oh, yeah, that's
a great idea.
And I put it out there as a kind of a cautious thing, sort of half expecting people to be like, why? What's the fucking point? Who cares? And it was a really supportive thing that came back from it.
Mm. So and there you go. The internet does have a hub that will love you. I don't know what the fuck I was thinking of when I said that, but yeah, join the
it's
group.
It's Pornhub, isn't it?
Yeah, true. Yeah, so that's the place to go if you want to talk comics. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe and leave a review. Helps get the word out about the show. We're now on Spotify as well.
Yes.
So thank you for listening to us. If you listen to us via Spotify,
that's not that impressive. We're on Spotify. They'll let anyone on.
That is true. But we're legit now. So there you go.
Although we were that legit, we haven't been invited onto the Nerds Who Haunted Themselves. I've got one out to you.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't think you'd want to slum it on there. I think Andy did throw an on-air invite.
You're absolutely right.
Want to slum it on that.
You're absolutely right.
But Vince is too diva for us.
Vince won't go on there after he is this week's show.
I'm looking forward to that. But if you listen to us on the Stitch Network, the Podnose Network, Podknife, what other networks are we on, Tony?
We're on Pod Puppet Master 2018.
Yes.
Fucking good.
The Puppet Master, the Last Reich, isn't it that what it's called?
The littlest Reich.
Yeah. Stay tuned to this show because you're going to hear a bit more about that in the future.
Good.
Yeah,
we need to get the guy who writes the Puppet Master comic on, because he started following us, didn't he?
Yes.
Oh, there you go.
He seems like a really good guy as well. To get him on.
Would you be happy if we had a Puppet Master show?
As long as I got you guys to read the comic and we talked about that, I would be over the moon, because it's so good.
Yeah. A live reading.
But live reenactment. We don't have to watch the film, though, do we?
Yeah. Well, what do you mean you haven't watched them already?
What?
I haven't seen a Puppet Master film in years.
No, and I am staying away from the Axis of Evil or whatever it's called. Anyway.
Let's go to the pictures and see it. I'll sit in the middle.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Bucket of popcorn, but yeah. Where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
Ezohyz, and on a very sexy panel on the 5th of August.
Nice.
There you go. So you'll be able to see his face. You'll be able to stroke his face in public.
No. Well, yeah, okay.
No photos, no video.
No.
Yeah.
Where can people find you, Dan?
Find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Brilliant. You can find me on Twitter at Jester Diablo. You can find out more about my comics at theredmousefrommars.com. And Stuart, thank you for joining us this week. Where can people find you, etc.?
OKTrueBelievers.com is the website, and Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter are all OKTrueBelievers. And me personally, I've got an Instagram for my drawing, which is Stuart Thinks He Can Draw, and there's also a Facebook page for it as well. And that's probably the only interesting things you want to know.
Nice. So there you go. That's another show in the bag. Thank you for listening, folks. It's another awesome one. I've got some more comics to check out and add to my wish list, my ever-growing wish list. God help me. And my wallet. But we hope you enjoyed. Thank you for listening. Go forth, read comics, and hopefully see you at the True Believer Summer Variant this Sunday.
Yeah.
So from Dan, Tony, Stuart, and myself, have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. And as always, Tony, what do they do? Say it.
What?
Say it.
Oh, don't bully me. Stay awesome.
Yay!
Yay!
Bye!